Just testing it.
No, I'll just start something.
We don't want any.
But. I could show you this map to give you kind of a general idea on kind of the outlay of where the brethren are basically in India. Just kind of highlighted it.
Where did you go then?
We flew into Bombay, and there's one class in Bombay. The brother, the friends are familiar with there is Brother Bharti, who came to America with his wife. And there's about 8 consecrated there. And we stayed at Bombay for 4 days, and then we took a bus, a 28-hour bus ride down to Mangalore. And at Mangalore, there's a class, and the brother there, the elder, consecrated in 1947, and his name is Brother Alexander Koshian. And there's a Brother Peters there who's about 36. He consecrated about 5 years ago, and he has an excellent, wonderful knowledge of the truth. Very wonderful knowledge of the truth. And there's, there are about, let's see. I'm trying to remember here. There were 7 consecrated in their class there. We stayed there for several days. I'll just give a brief outline here. Then we went over to Mysore. And in Mysore, there's 2 ecclesias. And one of the ecclesias is where Brother Williams is the elder, and his wife is in New York City. And she came out to one of the meetings. She's going to be there, it seems like, for several years. Mm-hmm. So Alpha's going to try to contact her.
You know what she's doing
here? Her and her daughter are here, and Alpha had mentioned that they heard that she was here because a relative had cancer. But Brother Williams didn't mention that specifically to us, so I'm really not sure. Then we traveled from Mysore down to Kumbhatore. And there's a class down there where there are supposed to be 60 consecrated. We saw about 40 at the meeting. Mm-hmm. And the brother there, he's the leading brother. There's another elder. The leading brother is Brother Joseph, and he's quite knowledgeable. And he has very good English, and he translated for us. And he accompanied us down to Trichy, or Trichyapalli. And Trichy is a class that we didn't know existed, so we put them into our trip, and we visited those brethren, and there are 120 that come out to meeting, and 60 are consecrated, and we met with about 45 there, and they have their own meeting hall. And when you walk up to the building, it has Bible Students Association established 1919.
I'm not sure what the origin. They go back then to Brother Russell's time.
There was a brother that really dated back to Brother Russell's time. And
the
picture, I think the picture is in
the reprint.
Okay.
Is that the
report and reprint? Yeah.
19. Yeah. I forget the name of Gilbert. He spoke very highly. When you say consecrated, do you feel they do understand consecration? Were you able to get a feel?
Well, the ones that we could communicate with English to English, we felt certainly understood consecration. There were many, like when I say there are 60 consecrated in Trichy, well, only the 4 elders even speak any English enough to converse.
Mm-hmm.
So all I could really get, of course, a feel for was those 4 elders. But they said that there were 60 out of 120 who they felt were consecrated. So you almost have to go by, in those areas, you have to go by their understanding. But the ones who spoke English, you could see they were very dedicated.
You get the brethren say, the elders would say, these are my students.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, that was general?
Yes. Yes. That is probably one of the handicaps in India, is that the teachers did not encourage personal volume study to the individuals as much as they encourage them to listen to to their teachings, and they would present the thoughts of the volume. So when the teachers pass away, many of the classes are really handicapped because they've been spoon-fed basically by their teachers, and then they haven't, some of them haven't instituted volume studies of their own, and they've lost their excellent students, and yet they've got the concepts, but they don't have a lot of connecting proofs.
Well, then, would that be to do with there only being the volumes in English? Is that part of the problem?
The first volume has been translated into Canada. I have a copy of the first volume in Canada. And it's interesting because on the back, they offer all six volumes. Of course, it's in English. And that has Brother Jayapa's address on it. Brother Jayapa is located in Mysore. Yeah, we met with him. And he's in full-time service. He goes to 8 to 12 different homes to have studies, and he travels quite a ways from his own home. And then he has a class. He says of about 30, we didn't need his class. Right. And we understand that the first volume is being reprinted in Tamil right now. And then we met in one class, which had never been visited by English or white brethren before. And they have translated longhand. They showed us they translated the second volume into their own language. And so they're looking to have that printed in the future.
So then they're dependent really a lot on their leaders.
On the ones who can read English.
Yeah. But they do have a fair amount of
leaflets,
don't they?
There are a few, but even that's dwindled.
Yeah.
There were previous printing efforts, and depending where the ecclesia is, they only have certain amounts. And because they speak basically three different languages, the Marathi, Tamil, and Kannada languages, they can't even necessarily always assist one another. That's where brethren like Gilbert, S.R. Gilbert, Gilbert Sundararajan, and others of his caliber, having the ability to speak several languages, were such a blessing because they could travel amongst all the brethren. But as divisions crept up over the years, personality problems, the problems with the Dawn India Committee in India, once that split up, there were divisions, and certain brethren just wouldn't have anything to do with other committee brethren, and so there were divisions, and so that handicapped a lot of their efforts. So then we came up from Trichy to Bangalore, and in Bangalore there are four different ecclesias and about 12 different parlor or home meetings. There are four different ecclesias there.
Is that because of being a large area? Is it because of location or because there are divisions in it?
Part of its language. They speak, so there's a group there that speaks Tamil, and the regular language in the area is Kannada. And then some of it is personality differences.
Mm-hmm.
All the brethren in India told us that they are not divided on doctrine. It's strictly divisions on personality and financial problems in the past. Doctrinally, they've all said it on both sides of the fence, that they're agreed doctrinally. They all have a high regard for the pastor's writings. They study all six volumes.
What would you say is their doctrinal position?
Well, it's interesting that they all believe that Christ returned in 1874, and they all believe that Christ began reigning in 1878. And when we suggested that some of the brethren, that was a point of controversy here, they never dreamed of that. They'd never heard of that. And they, when we spoke, some of the subjects we spoke on, I kind of outline it, but we spoke on the doubles, and the parallels, the jubilees, and these were all things that they encouraged us to speak on. These are concepts that their elders were teaching, and this is what they're familiar with, and these are their proofs. In fact, on our public discourse, they gave us the chosen topics. They asked us to speak to the public on signs of the end of the present world, which I spoke on, and then signs of the second advent of the world's Redeemer, Jesus Christ. And that's what Brett spoke on, and they were assigned topics, and they made up little tracts to distribute afterwards to go along, and in their track on the signs of the second advent, they touched on the Jubilees and the signs of the times, 1335 days,
right.
And the different proofs as we would understand it.
Yeah.
This is the class where Brother Suresh is the leading brother there.
He seemed pretty advanced then.
Oh, yeah.
Where's he in Bangalore?
And that's in Bangalore, yeah.
Up here?
Bangalore is in the center here.
Now you say like 28 hours a year, is that...
That's bus.
By bus, is that good roads?
The roads in India are terrible.
It's not just such a long distance.
It's because they stop and the roads are terrible. Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Their roads were paved by the British 40 years ago, and they haven't added to their infrastructure since. And when the British paved, they paved the old caravan trails. So when two buses or a lorry, that's what they call their trucks, their lorries, when they come to pass, one of you has to put your outside wheels off on the shoulder of the road. So every time you go to pass, everything rocks and bumps and quakes. And if there's an ox cart in front of you, then you just stop. I mean, they have a horrendous amount of accidents there. And so that's what makes it so long. Our brother were to go over there, if we were to do it again, we would fly that leg. Because you can fly that distance for about $60. You could fly it, and it would be worth it, yes.
Now, Brother Gilbert used to go around on a bicycle. What area, how big of an area would he be traveling?
Okay, Gilbert's home with his sister, Sister Bhargava, is in Secunderabad, which is here. But they're almost isolated. He talked to many different friends here, we understand, but there aren't really any concentrated here. There's not a class established.
That's
okay. So he spent, supposedly, by what we've been told, some of the friends will know more about Brother Gilbert than we did, not having met him personally. But we were told that he would travel 10 months out of the year. And the different brother, like bicycle and train and bus. Bus is the most inexpensive, so I'm sure he traveled much by bus. And he'd spend maybe a month in Bombay with the friends, and he'd live right with the friends. And he would spend time in Bangalore. He was much beloved in Bangalore. In fact, he gave away, so to speak, I'm not sure if that's a proper term, but at Charles Suresh's wedding, Charles tells a story that Brother Gilbert wasn't there at the wedding, and he was like their uncle. He'd spend so much time in the Fernandez home, and here Brother Suresh was having his wedding, and Gilbert wasn't there. And Gilbert traveled all night. He crawled up in a lorry and drove with this truck driver, and he just was trying to get to this wedding. And the wedding was going on, and all of a sudden he comes walking up. Wait, hold it. And they were right at the wedding, and then he walked up, and so the brother was performing, it just stepped aside, and then that's how Gilbert just took over the wedding. He took over the wedding, and he finished it for him. And everyone was just all happy that he made it. He showed up, he'd been traveling for a couple of days, and rode all night in the lorry, and he got there. So he was very much beloved for many, many, many years. We've talked to many different brothers who received the truth from Brother Gilbert, and they remembered him. But then in the later years, the last several years, when all these problems came up with the Dawn India Committee in India, the five brethren, of which S.R. Gilbert was one of the members, when they all split up and had their problems, then there was a lot of hardships created, and he didn't have the same freedom of travel. So they look back and speak fondly of Brother Gilbert, and yet there were problems in the last several years. So, we went from Bangalore, and we flew to Madras. And Madras is quite a large city, very hot there, never gets below 90 degrees, we were told. And we met a brother, Furtado, who is he's a brother by himself, but he is probably the most well-to-do brother in all of India. But he is not consecrated. He is contemplating consecration. He's still counting the cost. But he's read the first three volumes, and he is a sales manager, and he's the only brother that we met that owns a car of his own.
The only one?
Yeah, he's the only one that we met that owns his own car.
Not the brethren in our little well.
Well, it's you have to be extremely well-to-do to own a car in India. Mm-hmm. It's like they're upper middle class. There's only three brethren we met that own their own homes. All the rest rent. We met one brother in Kunar, which is in this area here, and he owned a car for his company. Right, they had a 2-day convention there. And he had an old beat up car that he used for his company. It was a tire and belt company. But this brother had a nice new Ambassador car, and he was the only one that had one. And he stayed in a very nice home. Well, we spent the afternoon with him. He happened to be going out of town. And when Ray and David were there, they could not meet with him because he had to go out of town expectedly as a sales manager. So we just caught him for one afternoon. But when we walked in, he had all the truth literature on a nice table on display in his front living room. And he had his wife cook us a nice meal, and his mother's very interested in the truth. And
does he has, like, people he sells to, then he has customers come to the house? Is that the idea?
And he has salespeople and,
and
neighbors. And he was asking us, how do you tell people that you're not Jehovah's Witnesses? So it's interesting. They have the same exact problem several places, you know, with the Jehovah's Witnesses. And how do we show we're different?
How did he get the truth?
He got the truth. I'm trying to remember right now. I can't remember right offhand exactly how he got the truth. But when we got there, he said, I'd like one of you to speak on the Jubilees. So he said fine. So we go over there and we figure, well, you know, just outline the Jubilees for him. But what it is, he just got done reading the second volume three times because he wanted to be sure to get it.
Mm-hmm.
So we got there, and he has all these wonderful charts made up. And he's got them hanging. He brings them out and rolls them out. He's got a big chart with them. All the days of waiting and the 2,300 days of the sanctuary. And brings you all down to the dates at the second advent. And he's going, now, how do we prove the starting date for the 2,300 days? And so you bring out about the 70 weeks and it's the same vision and how it made the vision sure and all. And he's going, oh, okay, good. He says, I'll make sure I got that right. And then he'd say, now, what does it mean in 1881, the end of the general call? And so we'd explain what the thought there, replacement crowns and different things. And okay, well, I want to make sure I had that right. He goes, now, what is the cleansed sanctuary exactly? What happened there with the Evangelical Alliance? Well, if you didn't belong to that, that showed that you were the cleansed sanctuary class, and that was where Bible students basically originated. Oh, okay, all right. So he says, okay, well, that's helpful. I just wanted to make sure I had this right. And then he brings out all these big charts on the Jubilees. He has the law reckoning. He has the prophetic reckoning. He has all the dates and all the math. He did it all himself.
He's
an
artist?
Oh, yeah. He put it all together. Oh, no. This brother's in Madras.
Oh, just
it was one individual all by himself. So,
would it be worth getting copies of the charts? That could be worth getting copies of?
Well, they would be what you would get right from the volumes. But he said he made these other charts of all these dates because he wanted to see how they lined up with each other.
Yeah.
So I was just speaking on the Jubilee. So I'm thinking to myself, he pulled up a chair, his wife and his mother, and I'm thinking to myself, what am I going to tell him about the Jubilees? He's got it all outlined here.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, well, maybe he just wants it for his mother and his wife's sake. So we started outlining, you know, the basic concepts, and I was using his own chart. So I'm thinking, well, as you can see, is what you have here. You know, they entered the land 1575, and this is the law of the Jubilee, and going through it.
Did you need to study in class?
Oh, well, it was just kind of interesting. It's just like I was just wondering what was it that he wanted explained. I didn't know if he wanted it for his relatives.
Did you find out?
Well, we got into a little ways, and he said, well, we know all that. He said, I just had a question. Are we supposed to reckon the law reckoning? Are we supposed to reconcile it with the prophetic reckoning? Or are they two distinct ways of figuring it? And we said, it's two distinct ways. They're not meant to reconcile, except they do point to the same day. But you don't, one doesn't make allowances for the other. They're two separate, distinct ways. Oh, okay, he said. I wanted to make sure I had it right. I just wanted to know. He said, I had a little doubt. And so we asked a few more questions. We elaborated a few things. And then that was all set. And he said, oh, okay, that's what I want to know.
So, well, he got it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was very sharp. And so then we were talking to him, and he says, well, that's when we asked him, are you consecrated? And he says, no. He says, I'm waiting to find a brother who I feel could really baptize him. Someone who really lived righteously.
Maybe that's just explaining chapter with, you know, Brother Russell's field.
Well, we went into, we described that, you know, you didn't even have to take, it didn't have to even be someone consecrated to perform this for you because he was the only one there. But the thing was, there's another little class in the area, but he doesn't attend their meetings because they hold it in a different language. So he didn't feel comfortable with it. They could understand each other, but for some reason it, he didn't feel motivated to meet.
I think that would be better for him to...
Well, it would be. It's a beautiful class, one of the most beautiful classes we had met. That's where they had translated the second volume into their own language, this little class in Madras. Yeah? Longhand.
Wow.
And he's making, that brother is making a copy of it nicer, and he's going to send it back to the United States for us to photocopy for him, and then we're going to mail it back with about 20 photocopies for his class, and then they're going to take the original and send it to Trichy where they have a press, and they're going to print it.
They don't have any copy machines there? No.
Well, for 20 copies, the thickness of the manuscript on the second volume would be very expensive for them. Where if they could just take the one copy and put it in the mail, I said he would pay the postage here, and then we can make all the copies and send it back to them, and it wouldn't cost them anything except the one postage here. And for that little class, that was about the poorest class we saw.
Yeah.
They were in a very destitute area. They had a set of reprints, partial set of reprints.
So it's more like a gift to them then, to do it that way.
Yeah. Because then they would have it much more readily. The class would have it because it might take 4 or 5 months to be printed over in Trichy.
Yeah.
And
then but they can they photocopy if they want to?
We saw a couple places that advertised Xerox copying, and I'm sure in the larger cities you could get it done. But the degree of quality and whatnot, I'm not sure how good it would be.
In other words, this brother was consecrated, but he was not baptized.
No.
He says we pursued it with him, and he says, well, he says, I guess I'm really still counting the cost. Brother Furtado said that. I guess I'm still counting the cost. So we said, well, you know, that's reasonable.
Time and effort into studying and trying to understand. So to feel
that if there was somebody there that he really believe was righteous to
represent the law.
Well, this kind of seemed that that was his first excuse, and then when we pressed him, that's when he said, well, he was still counting the cost, so I kind of think that was really more of the reason.
Mm-hmm.
But he might have been a little embarrassed to bring it out at first, but that's what he ended up saying. So anyway, we spent that afternoon with Brother Furtado and very lovely family. They were very nice. And then he had to leave. So he was very interested in getting a set of reprints and other books. So he's on the list for that.
You have a list of brethren needing reprints?
We have a list, but there's only about 4 priority on reprints. But what we do have is a list of all the English reading brothers. And I could read it at the end of the tape, what we're going to make the brethren aware of books to send, because there are hardly any manuals, question books. We only saw 2 gems of the mind, no Old Testament comments. In Trichy, they're asking for 4 sets of volumes. The elders don't have volumes in Trichy.
Oh, that would be so easy to send.
And they don't have any hymns of dawn. They don't have songs in the night. They need charts, they need lexicons, diaglots.
They have
Bibles.
What then does the committee supply to them? Or aren't they all in contact with the committee?
Not all of the ecclesias are in contact with the committee because of problems in the past.
Yeah.
Trichy has separated itself, for an example.
Mm-hmm.
But David and Ray, 2 years ago, put a call out through the Dawn magazine for reprints, and which there was a response, and that's how we initially got involved with this idea. And so there was a fairly good response to that. In the past, the committee, and David and Ray particularly, have sent certain books over so that there would be a copy in several of the ecclesias, like, you know, in Brother Daniels, Brother Williams, Brother Barsay, Brother Fernandez, they would have a copy of some of the republished books in Chicago. But they might only have 1 in the whole class. So many of the other brethren who read English, who are consecrated, were begging us to send them manuals and comment books and their own set of volumes. So there is that. It is a very real need. And we've made it, we've recorded the number of requests by the English reading consecrated brethren in all the different classes. And we're hoping to mail to each of the ecclesias independently without having to use a committee in India, because they're frustrated with working with committees, which have caused problems in the past. So that is why we feel that we are just sending literature. We specifically stated, and they specifically asked, not for money, because that's been the problem in the past. No type of financial aid. What they want, though, is the pastor's writing. So, that's what we're going to organize then, to make sure that all the English reading consecrated all have a complete set of all the pastor's writings for the class, including charts and lexicons and Bible aids, like a Bible, Smith's Bible Dictionary, Thayer's Lexicon, Strong's Concordances. And then for each of the English reading consecrated, we're going to send multiple sets of like the 8 basic books, a set of volumes, the Tabernacle Shadows, a Gems, a Manual, What the Pastor Taught in the Covenant, a Question Book, Old Testament Comments, and the Volume Index. So that's what you would have in your own study library, in a diaglot. Yeah, I mentioned that. So they would have that for their own personal use. The English Reading Consecrated is about 40. But there would be one complete set for each class of Harvest Gleanings, 1 and 2 Convention Reports, reprints, some charts.
Did you say how many classes there are?
We met with 12 ecclesias. So that we would figure 12 complete sets.
Because the Harvest Gleanings, would you think they were so important? I mean, I know they're nice to have historically, but I don't know whether...
The only thing is... The only thing we were impressed with was that there was one complete set of all the pastors' writings for each class. That would mean only 12 sets.
Mm-hmm.
Then they would all have it, and they would all feel, in a sense, equal with one another.
Because I think, doesn't Harvest Gleanings go back like some earlier...
Yeah,
Three Worlds is in there.
Because that's still good, though. It's still true, but I was just thinking, I'm not sure.
They were so proud to show us the pastor's writings that they do have.
Yeah.
They would be so proud of what libraries they have,
yeah,
because they were like you. And they have a lot of respect for their overseas brethren, because they can come and speak on these subjects. And so when they can show you that they have these writings, which they dearly love, and they all keep them very nice and neat, no matter how lowly of a home it's in. The walls need painting, and the floor is dirty, and all. They everywhere we went, the books were always very, very well kept.
Mm-hmm.
They were their chief treasures. So, some of the reprints they had gotten, like they showed us, they were so dog-eared and falling apart. They were so old they couldn't even use them. And several of the sets were just incomplete.
Were they like the old?
The old green ones, the original reprints. So, so we're going to try to update those sets for them, and then as fulfill this initial order of getting the pastor's writings to them, and then if contributions still continue, then bringing them up to date with new sets of reprints. You know, as time goes on, that's what we'd like to see down the road.
Are you doing this independent of the committee or in conjunction with them?
Brother Brent and I felt that it would just be much more simple, because we have the information now, and we have established contact,
mm-hmm,
with several classes that the committee is not to have contact with, it because we're sending strictly literature, the pastor's, mm-hmm, literature, that we will just send it on our own.
Yeah. How did you get in contact with classes that they're not in contact with then?
Basically, because we went to Madras.
Uh-huh.
There was a young class there and met with his brother Potato, but the young class there had not met any white brethren before. And so we didn't know they even existed until we got to India. And in Trichy, they have had visits before in the past from Brother Pollock and some of the other friends, but they are not in harmony with the other some of the other classes in the area.
Yeah.
So that was those two instances offhand.
So the ones in the Jaws told you about Kunti, is that how you saw that?
The ones in Kumbhi Ator, Brother Joseph, I.A. Joseph in Kumbhi Ator told us about the brother in the Madras. And we received one of the publications of the brother in Trichy, and we made inquiries, and then we were able to go down and meet the brother. The brother in Trichy were very concerned that we were coming to offer financial aid because they had cut themselves off entirely from the Dawn Indian Bible students because of the problems with the financial aid in the past. And once we assured them we were just going to send literature, and the elders talked with us, they were very excited and asked for four sets of the volumes. So they were really encouraged.
They had their own press.
They had their own press, and they've been publishing a booklet there called the Bible Students Association Monthly Magazine, and here is a copy from 1953. And you can see the booklets they offer on the back, which is about all you can read because the rest is in Tamil. And here's a one that they came out just, this is 1981 copy they had, but you can just see this is what they're publishing on their own press every month. Articles written by Indian brethren.
How big of a list do they have?
Mailing list? I'm not sure.
It's interesting the order of the volumes that they put. Volume 1, Volume 6, 2, 3, and 5.
They don't
offer
it before? I can't see it anywhere.
That's 1953. It was kind of interesting, like on the back of this book, what they have all six volumes outlined.
Oh, Scripture Studies 1 set. That's funny. They have them separately here, and then down here, Scripture Studies 1 set 6 volumes.
So that was very interesting. So we then took a train from Madras over to Bombay, and it only cost $32. And that took 24 hours to get a sleeper and included your meal.
Oh.
It was air conditioned.
I didn't know such a thing existed.
Yeah, just in the first class sleeper coach. Oh yeah, that was real nice. Of course, still Americans wouldn't ever pay an American to ride a train that was as beleaguered and as that, but for India it was quite nice. So sometimes if you were to make this circuit in India, as you can see, it's the brethren all in the southern part.
You didn't go to Calcutta?
We didn't go to Calcutta because there were no brethren there.
Oh no.
And we didn't go up to Delhi because we understand that there aren't any brethren up there. It would have cost $200 to fly from here to Calcutta.
If there are no brethren, no, there will be no reason.
And the thing is, because we didn't schedule the flight previously, you're not sure until you get to Calcutta that you can fly out. And we had an engagement in Bombay on the 17th to speak at a dinner meeting, so we had to be back, so we couldn't take the chance. Plus, when we found Trichy and the Madras brethren, so we hadn't planned as a trip, we then could, you know, spend that time that we were going to use traveling.
Did you hear of a reason why it's all in the south that the brethren are, or towards the southern half?
That's basically where most of the missionary work was done. Brother S.R. Gilbert traveled through the north more extensively than anyone else, we understand. But there were several brethren who were very instrumental in establishing most of the ecclesias today in the south. Brother Sundarajan.
Oh yeah, he died.
He died, and he came, of course, here to the States.
Mm-hmm.
And Brother Jayappa. Well, Brother Sundarajan is the oldest brother that these friends remember back to. And he actually brought the truth to S.R. Gilbert. Then S.R. Gilbert witnessed, and then there was Brother Jayappa, and there was Brother Barnabas. And these were what are called the primary movers in establishing and witnessing all the different ecclesias, and that was mainly in the south. S.R. Gilbert was the one who traveled the northern routes, but it was mostly in the south where their work was most fruitful. Brother Jayappa we met Brother Sundarajan's son, who is called Sonny, and he's consecrated, and he's in his early 20s. And And then another very active brother who was responsible for establishing the class at Kunar is Brother Daniel. And Brother Daniel has a very, very good knowledge of the truth. And we were most impressed with Brother Daniel.
Do you think their poverty is an advantage? You know, so much you get affluence, materialism has an effect on the brethren, I wonder then.
Well, one disadvantage of poverty is that they have to, they have very meager ways of witnessing the truth. And as we can see, they have to have the books given to them. They certainly can't afford to buy the books.
What witnessing methods do they use?
Well, for example, this one public talk that they had set up, they printed these up and distributed them.
How did they distribute them?
By hand, outside churches.
Oh.
They went outside the churches and distributed them.
They don't get persecution?
In Bangalore, there's Brother Fernandez and Brother Suresh's class. They say that they have a fairly good rapport with the churches.
His brother, Yoga, he told us of a few ancient things in there. He has a persecution. Well, that's right, too. This will be Christian churches, yes.
But there were other brethren that told us that they really had it out tooth and nail with the Roman Catholics and Lutherans in their area. So that was the only time we really heard that. I don't think that's the rule of thumb. It just happened to be there. In fact, Brother Barthi told us that they had a little booth once, and a priest came by and was threatening to close it all down, and they had to get the principal of the school where they had their booth to come and verify that they could stay. Keep the booth open. So there's a different struggle that they had. It was kind of interesting.
What proportion of the population is Christian?
No, I'm not exactly sure. It was overwhelmingly Hindu, and there's some Muslims. Brother Paul,
hi.
How you doing?
Sit down.
Good to see you. Hi.
Hi.
Yeah,
it doesn't really matter. We're recording, so it's for Alpha's benefit. That's why I put quite on everything you've got.
No.
Alpha gets all these things.
How many brethren would you say that this is
Well, we estimate that we met 300 brethren, and out of that there are over 40 English reading brethren, over 40 English reading. For them to really read it and understanding, that even narrows it down a little bit further. But most all the elders can read English. And so they've read the volumes and are able to convey those concepts to the rest of the ecclesia. Now, two of the little peculiarities that stand out is that, one, they don't have very formalized elections the way we understand it.
Well, they don't.
Well, it's kind of, each ecclesia has its own little flavor of how they do it. It's very difficult to really get them to elaborate on it. But the elder, when they are elected an elder, it's unusual for them not to be after that. That's kind of their office. And their elders...
Is that a problem? Does that create a problem?
Well, to a degree, but they kind of grin and bear it. In some problems, some areas it's a problem, other areas it seems to work nicely. But they don't have any deacons anywhere. They don't have that office at all. Period. They just
don't. They recognize it exists in the sixth volume.
Well, they just, I know we talked to them about it, and it's just they never have had deacons. Whatever needs to be done, the brothers just do, basically. And what else was I going to think offhand? They don't have any testimony meetings. They have no testimony meetings. They just have never been practiced there, apparently.
Did they try, or you were there, or did you try to encourage
it? Well, we tried to encourage it. We encouraged the elders to look into it, because the pastor thought it was so important, and it's really a nice balance for the friends. But they, that hadn't been practiced, so they didn't do it.
Well, who does deacon work? Just anyone does.
Basically, yeah.
And they probably don't have committees or...
Well, they don't have the same resources that we have, so they don't have many of the same activities that we do.
Mm-hmm.
There are several classes that do have mailings,
yeah.
And that's one of their activities. And they do, there are several classes where they run newspaper advertising and for booklets, and then their public talks. So that's basically how the classes do their public witness.
You said, number two, that a lot of the brothers can't read the volume, so they wouldn't necessarily know.
But the elders all have basically read the volumes, and so they have an understanding of what should transpire.
I thought that they all kind of don't, you know, every class. Doesn't have deacons or testimonies.
No.
I'm surprised that someone wouldn't.
Never had been practiced, so it's never caught on.
Because there's no real need for deacons. It would be more of a problem if they never had elections for elders. But even then, though, not to have them annually. Because I know the scriptures don't say it has to be annually.
No. Brother Barstay in Bombay, maybe we just start back at the beginning of the trip. I'm going to glance at these notes because I think there's just a few thoughts in here that help kind of relate a little bit better. When we got into Bombay, Brother Barsi was very helpful because Brent didn't know he needed a visa. The law changed from the time he left Canada to the time he got to India. They changed the law that Commonwealth citizens had to have a visa to enter Canada, but being Canadian before, that had never been required because India had been part of the Commonwealth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he spent a night at the airport waiting for me to come in the next day, and then Brother Barsi came and got him out from custody there, but they were going to turn around and send him right on to the next plane to Hong Kong. So the Lord really overruled that they allowed him to spend the night and that I came in the next day. Now there's a double overruling in this. I was flying in to Bombay from London, England, and I had flown into London, England the day before from Tel Aviv. My bag got left in Tel Aviv, so when I arrived in London I didn't have my suitcase. Spent the night in the hotel, and they said they'll try to get my bag within 3 days. Well, there was no, I traveled British Airways. Well, British Airways had no flight from Israel the next day, but Il Al Airline did. But Il Al Airline doesn't have a regular office in London. They only open their office when they have a flight coming in because their personnel comes in on the flight, then they close it down because of terrorists. So there's no way to get in contact. So every time we call to the airport the next day, and I'm supposed to leave at 5 o'clock to fly to Bombay, I still don't have my bag at 12 noon, and no one could give me the right answer. One would say, well, there's no flight in today. The other one would say, well, they located your bag in Tel Aviv, and back and forth. So I just said, well, we'll just have to leave it in the Lord's hands. And I just thought, well, if my bag isn't there, I'll just wait a couple days for my bag to come, and then I'll go to Bombay. And Brent, I'm sure, will be able to manage with Brother Barsi there, with a friend. And I didn't know that, of course, he was having this problem in Bombay, where if I didn't show up the next day, they were going to send him to Hong Kong. So I went to the airport, and just walked over to the next terminal and just checked in the nick of time, and then I flew to Bombay, and Brent was standing there with a guard next to him, and he was all excited. Rick! I'm thinking, boy, he also was excited. But he had spent the night there, and so...
So if you hadn't come in, they'd have sent him to Hong Kong?
They would have sent him to Hong Kong.
And then what are you doing in Hong Kong?
He would have had to try to get a visa and come back somehow, but they would have going to send him on to his next destination. They weren't going to allow him in India.
And how did you save him?
Brother Barsi came, and Brother Barsi was looking for me, so we made the connection, and then with Brent there, Brother Barsi talked with the people, and they got him a temporary visa, and then Brother Barsi cut through a lot of the red tape by being able to speak the Indian language, and he took us to the office several days later, the visa office, and got a specific visa. But I was in London worrying, waiting on the Lord for the bag, and Brent was in Bombay waiting on the Lord on whether or not he was going to be able to come to India. So we were both being tested at the same time and didn't even realize about the other one, and so the Lord really overruled. So we're thankful for that. So when we got to Bombay, that night we went and had fellowship with Brother Barthe's family, and then we had a discussion on the importance of the volumes and demonstrated for them how to use the reprint index properly and for the greatest benefit.
Well,
and,
when you were talking to him, was it easy to get into discussions, or were they kind of shy and quiet? They kind of have to be prompted, or do they?
Well, they're total strangers, but it was easy enough to talk on subjects. Brother Barthe and his family are very, very friendly. Very friendly. And Brother Barthe, I don't believe, though, has read past the first volume himself, but he had been taught the concepts of the volumes from Brother Gilbert, S.R. Gilbert. That is part of that teacher-pupil relationship, that they would rely on the teachers. Well, now that S.R. Gilbert has been changed, now he has to pick up many of the pieces, and it's difficult. One night we had a study on the three covenants, and he wasn't fully in tune with that from the past.
I was wondering about these other elders. Are they really well versed on the volumes?
Several of them are, yes, very well versed. Very clear. Very clear. On the covenant, sin offering, tabernacle, the Levitical pictures. Very sharp. And let's see. So that night, we had that discussion, and we encouraged him to have a first volume study in there, start a first volume study. He didn't think there was enough there that they could have a good study, but there are eight brethren that they meet with, and so we were encouraging him that many of our ecclesias here are only that size, and that would be the best. It would be a good outline. So we suggested we would send them the question book for the first volume.
They don't study the volumes that much then? It's mostly the elders give discourses?
They lead studies and they give discourses. Some of them study the Dawn magazines, but a number of the ecclesias do study the volumes. Well, but Father Barthe in his area, they hadn't initiated a first volume study yet. Well, the second day there, they had a convention of 40 people. And at that convention, they had a little memorial service for Brother S.R. Gilbert. They had a prayer and a moment of silence, and it was very nice. And Brother S.R. Gilbert had established what they call an Israeli Indian Bible Student Association.
Oh.
And the Israeli assistant consulate and his wife were there for the convention, and they showed a little movie on Israel.
Huh.
And yet they sat and listened to our discourses, and so we were assigned a topic to speak on Israel. And so we gave a discourse on the promised seed and the hope for Israel and fulfilled prophecy, and we mentioned about Christ as being our understanding of the spiritual seed and so forth. And at the end of the convention, this Israeli assistant consulate and his wife, they're young, they've been there for 2 years in India, they came up and they just said they had never heard the Bible explained that way. They were just enthralled with it. And we gave them a Time to Favor Zion booklet, and they were happy to get it. We told them that Menachem Begin had received the book and liked it, and they were impressed. And then he was asking more questions, so we showed him some prophecies in Zechariah about the city, yet future, when it would be taken, and different things, and he was just thrilled.
Brother Gilbert established?
I never could quite fully grasp the original roots of that, but they are very big on the hope of Israel.
I know, because he used to ask for it.
He'll script anything on Israel.
Yeah.
Even, religious,
They're just thrilled with it. Throughout India, the brethren are just thrilled with Israel. So, we find it fascinating. I don't see any connection with the cultures necessarily. There are some Jewish Indians, but it's certainly they're a minority.
Were those two Jewish? Were they Christians? Or
they were Jewish.
They weren't
even
Christians.
No.
It's nice that they were listening to you then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they were real, real familiar. So, Brother Brent spoke on the importance of the first volume and as a Bible aid, and he offered the first volume at the end, and quite a number of them responded that they would like to have it, and so we encourage Brother Barsi to show him that here would be a group that you could initiate in the first volume study and see that you could stir up the interest. But you have to have the meeting to invite them to come. If you wait for enough of them to say they want to have the meeting, you'll probably never get started. So it's best to get started type of thing. And so he was encouraged along those lines.
Did you have the first volumes right there?
No, we just demonstrated it, hold it all up, and then Brother Barthi would supply them. But those are one of the things that they would like to receive. It's the magazine edition.
That's what I was wondering for. Because like
they could give it out, because they have a keen concept that the truth is very important, and they don't want to just give it to someone who's not going to read it, which is kind of nice, because if you do send literature over, they're not going to just distribute it unless someone's going to use it. They have a high regard for it. One sister that was there, she's a doctor, she had traveled overnight to attend this one day convention. And she only could sit through two talks, and then she turned around and was leaving. But she wanted to meet us. She was just so thrilled. She traveled overnight to come. And after I had spoken on the promised seed, a sister came out and requested a list of the scriptures from the talk and all. And to me, that looks like an indicator that they were grasping what you're saying, and they are interested, and they made these added efforts. Then the next day we had a meeting at Sister Barsi's home. This is Brother Barsi's natural sister, and she's consecrated. And in her home, Brother Gilbert used to stay when he'd come. And she has a little apartment. And there were they gathered 19 people, and six were consecrated. And that's basically the nucleus of the class, six consecrated. And there is another brother there who's the elder with Brother Barsi, Brother Valero, called Lefero.
In every class, is it true that there's a lot more that are unconsecrated than consecrated in every class?
They call them well-wishers.
They call them well-wishers, friends of the truth. And that's generally the way it is, generally speaking, because they include their relatives who haven't made formal consecrations but would attend the meetings.
Does that mean that religion is fairly popular there, that people, it's no big thing for them to go? You know, I think of England, I think France is the same way. I mean, religion isn't popular, so it isn't a popular thing to attend a church or something. Like here, you say religion is sufficiently popular, it's quite appropriate for someone to go somewhere on Sunday, right? And, you know, we have enough unconsecrating coming, and it's not that hard for them to do, right? Would you think it's like that in India?
Well, it's more popular. Religion is popular. The Hindus, they have a million guys as it is. Yeah. So for them, one more to... there would be Hindus that come and listen, but we only met one brother who had been Hindu, who had converted. All the rest had come from Christian background, either Roman Catholic or Protestant. That doesn't mean that there weren't others, but we only met one compared to the rest, so that kind of gave us a flavor. So we spoke there on John 15th chapter about the fruits of the Spirit. And Brother Valero summed up our thoughts in his own language. Brother Barsi interpreted verse sentence by sentence, and then this Brother Valero kind of gave a summary in his language for those who were listening who could understand English, and then he would summarize it, and it would drive the point home that they didn't get in their own language. And he had been a preacher in the Anglican church. Their church, big church there, of course, from England,
was the Church of England, but they call it the Church of India.
Oh.
But it's Anglican.
Yeah.
And so he had been a preacher in the Anglican
church. An
ordained
priest, that means?
He's called it a preacher, so I'm not sure to what extent. But he had left. And I could just tell in his summary of our little talk, his summary was really preaching. Really getting into it. Yeah. That was pretty funny. The next night we met at Brother Barsi's home with his family, and they have a friend of the truth, his wife is consecrated, who works in photography and in pictures, and he, when we were talking about the photo drama, he has access to 3 projectors and a computer and a large screen, and they have all these sound equipment and all, and he personally has access to it. So he was suggesting that if they had the slides and the soundtrack, that's all they would need to put on for this cause. So we're going to talk to Brother George Tabak and make a suggestion, and maybe they could be in contact to see if it is feasible or not.
The one screen version?
Right. But they say they have all the equipment. So they're suggesting all it would take would be the slides. And I don't know enough about it to say that's right or wrong.
It's a computer. It's not just a projection.
Well, he says they have a computer programmer that for... I mean, when we talked about the synchronization of the different slide projectors and all, 9 projectors or 3 projectors or however, I mean, he was all right on the ball. So that's right up his field. And that's in Bombay. So it's a large city where that was his business in that. So we'll just offer that to George as a suggestion. Maybe he can follow up and know whether or not it is possible. He would know the ins and outs. We let Brent led a study on the 3 covenants with the family, and they certainly needed it. They needed that type of a deep study. Brother Barse was really drinking in. He was taking notes the whole time and whatnot, and you could see, though, that it was a subject that it wasn't like, you know, he could rattle it off. He was familiar with the concept, but they needed that added study for it. And his three daughters, none are consecrated, but there are, he said they all have an interest in the truth. They attend the meetings, and when Brent would ask questions in the studies, they would respond very nice. So they were picking up quite readily, so that was pretty good. Brother Barse gave us a booklet that Brother S.R. Gilbert wrote and printed, and he gave it to us to reprint. It's in the Marathi language, and it's called Bible Questions and Answers, and Brother Gilbert put it together, S.R. Gilbert, and I can't read it, but there's parts of it in the back that even have the Vicarious Filii Dei, Latinos, and Romans, showing the 666, the mark of the beast. So it covers a wide range of questions and answers throughout the Bible, trying to stimulate interest amongst those. But that's something that had been printed in our own language, so all we have to do is reprint it now very easily, and that'll give them some literature in their own language for witnessing. And then the next day we met Brother Barsi's brother-in-law, who lives actually 60 miles away from the city. And he has known Brother S.R. Gilbert since 1960. So he's been familiar with the truth for 24 years. And then he saw us off at the bus station. Then we had a 28-hour bus ride to Mangalore. And that's a rough ride. I certainly wouldn't recommend anybody to travel by bus that long a distance, because you don't have very good bathroom facilities or eating facilities, and the buses aren't luxury buses by no means, and it's crowded and it's hot and it's very bumpy. So it would be recommendable to fly that leg or take a first class train, but that would take a little longer.
It would just be if you had food with you that you could eat? Do the buses stop anywhere?
Well, they stop, but when you go in to order, it's just a little hobble on the side, and you don't even want to look in the kitchen to see how they're cooking it. And you eat with your fingers, and it's just rice with different types of toppings that you pour over, and it's all pretty fiery hot. So we ate trail mix, and that was our first meal we ate with our fingers, but then we kind of realized that it was pretty hot and fiery, and no one there spoke English well enough to really communicate very well. You just say whether or not you want a vegetarian meal or a non-vegetarian. Either way, it's still
similar to Mexican food.
A lot hotter, and a lot plainer. I mean, plain in the sense that it's rice with just a liquid topping you pour over it, curry and red pepper. A lot hotter. It's hard to believe, but...
Brent said in Africa it was hotter?
And Brent said in Nigeria the food was even hotter than there. So it's hard to believe. And let's see. And the following day, that was the first day, that was one of 2 days where we did not meet with brethren. All the other 28, out of the 28 days, there were only two 24-hour periods where we didn't meet with brethren. So it shows you that when you go, you have a very packed schedule with the friends. And each one, all of them are really inquisitive. They have a lot of questions. They want to know. They want you to serve.
How did you set up your itinerary?
Well, we just took the map and just scheduled what we thought we wanted to spend several days at each ecclesia. So we just took this map and we just kind of made a circular route.
We wrote ahead of time. Days you'd like to be there.
Mm-hmm. But we could only come within a couple of days because we had never traveled and we didn't know their modes of transportation, how long it would take. So we tried to keep it pretty close, and in several of the cities we were right on the dates. In several of the cities we telexed ahead our change of plans a day or two.
The brethren don't have phones?
A few of them have phones, but others just don't.
Does it matter if you come in there in the middle of the week or any day, Sundays or weekends?
The brethren took time off to see us. When we told them we were coming, they took time off. Some of the brethren were employed in little shops.
Well, no, it was all day at first.
All of them except for the last day or two in Bombay, where they had taken time off when we first reached Bombay, and one day in Bangalore, and all the rest of the time, day and evening, was with brethren. So there really is a lot of service there. So it's not a sightseeing type trip or anything. You kind of take that in as you travel from one city to the next. But other than that, the brethren are using you the whole time. We would just come and we'd say, we came to be a service to you, how would you like us to serve? And then they'd say, well, we've got this meeting, and want you at this dinner, and then we take you out to meet these friends in their home, because if you come to their home, white people coming to their home would just really carry a lot of weight with the local brethren who had been giving the message, like with their new interest.
Yeah, yeah.
So the white brethren coming, just if they even couldn't understand you, just being there gives them authenticity and prestige. So they really use you to the best of their ability. In fact, several said if we would ever come again, they would like us to spend a week, and they would take us out to all the surrounding villages where they go and witness to meet these little parlor meetings. So when we arrived at
parlor meetings,
Palatial.
Sitting room. What's popular there is blonde-haired, white-skinned dolls.
Oh, really?
Like if you go into the home, they might have their trinkets, like in the living room on display. They'll have a few little things, maybe a picture or a postcard, and most of them have some type of religious card or picture, and then a lot of them, it was funny, they have blonde, light-skinned dolls, because you never see blonde hair in India. It's all straight black hair and dark skin. So the blonde is very, very unusual, so, and the red beard was unusual.
Yeah,
You didn't go to Secunderabad.
She's in Secunderabad.
You didn't go there.
And Sister Bhargava returned on the 16th mm-hmm. from Israel. But we had to be, we'd already made plans to be in Bombay on the 17th at a dinner meeting.
Uh-huh. You know what?
So for us to stop on the 16th in Secunderabad and then be, visit her and then be at that dinner meeting in Bombay, it wouldn't have worked out.
Uh-huh. She actually returned on the 19th.
So it's a good thing.
So I got the message. My mother told me the 16th and she had gotten the message.
Well, then the Lord overruled.
I'm sorry. These are all the cities that you were at, all the ones in yellow?
We didn't go to Delhi or Calcutta or Secunderabad, but we went to all these cities.
Oh, I see.
Here. And we went back.
Secunderabad is the one we were just talking about. We're
talking
about Gilbert.
Yeah.
There's no brethren up here. All the brethren are down in here.
None in Delhi? Really?
Well, Calcutta.
Yeah, those are pretty big cities, aren't they?
Very big. Like there might be one brother who was transferred that lives up in this area for parts of the year, but he actually got the truth down here.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one interested brother outside Calcutta, but he's not consecrated. But we're going by what the Indian brethren told us, so that's basically what they were bringing out.
So pretty much down in this area and Bombay.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, it's only one sister that lives in Secunderabad now.
She apparently wasn't there then.
Sister Bhargava.
Yeah, she's consecrated, but not Marla. Yeah.
Some say that Sister Bhargava is not consecrated.
Oh.
Some say she is, so I don't know.
Did you meet her when she was
just here? No. But Marla, in fact, she stayed here.
So when we got to Mangalore, which was our next stop at the end of that bus ride from Bombay, we met Brother Alexander Koshian, which is the elder of that class, and he received the truth in 1947 from Brother Jayappa, and he has his own little bookbindery shop, very, very, very little. So we found him by an auto rickshaw driver, took us there. And you bounce down the road in this little auto rickshaw. That's how you get around in the small villages. It's a little two-cycle, three-wheel deal, and they're daredevil drivers.
Whoa.
And it's just that they take you on a wild ride. That you can't miss the auto rickshaws.
He said they don't drive with their lights on at night.
Yeah, very rarely they use their lights at night.
Then how do you see it? How do they see
go by the darkness. I mean, when someone's coming right on top of you, they put their lights on and they put their brights on and they blind each other and they shoot by each other just miss.
Oh.
All the time. It's very, very, very incredible.
I noticed you didn't put any weight on while you're over.
No, didn't put any weight. And whenever they come where they have to stop for any length of time, like a couple moments, if they have to stop, they turn off their car or they turn off their auto rickshaw. Well, they just turn it off.
Why do they turn it off?
I don't know.
Well, we've done it that way.
I don't know. They turn it off.
You mean like the stoplights?
Well, they don't have hardly any stoplights, but if you come to an intersection and the traffic's going the other way, they'll be stopped for a while. In some of the cities, they do have traffic lights, but very few. But I remember we were in a traffic jam in this one taxi, and he stopped. And he couldn't get it started. We had to get out and push him to get it started. And then after that, we told him, don't. Oh, boy.
What kind of roads do they have there? Just all bumpy roads?
Terrible roads. They were paved by the British about 40 years ago. And they paved over the caravan trails.
You mean there's cement surface?
Asphalt.
Oh, asphalt. But real rough.
And they're just, they've never really been maintained. And they're only wide enough that when two lorries or buses pass each other, one of them has to put their outer wheels off the shoulder. Mm-hmm. And Mike is right, so the larger one gets his way. They shoot by each other.
So they're probably not even as wide as the side street out here, then.
No.
And there's sufficient traffic that they must have to keep doing that all the time. Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was a lot.
Oh, the shoulder's pretty bad shape.
not really too bad, because the only road repair we saw was on the shoulders. They would drop big crushed gravel, loads of crushed gravel on some of the shoulders. Not, they wouldn't pave it out any further. They would just put down some crushed gravel.
We were driving on 75. He said, "Oh, I can't believe how smooth."
Yeah, you really get used to the bumps over there.
Condition.
So, Brother Alexander, when we located him in his bindery shop, he doesn't speak very good English at all. So, he immediately closed down his shop. This motion for us to stay in the auto rickshaw, and he got in another one, and then he took us across the town. No. And he took us across the town, and we met Brother Peters there. Now, this brother isn't yet consecrated, but he's very, very well studied. Very well studied. And he speaks very good English, real good English. And so he communicated for us. And he also translated for us when we gave our talks at Brother Alexander's class. Brother Alexander's read all the volumes. He reads English. He's read all the volumes, read Tabernacle Shadows. And Brother Peters, we fellowshipped all afternoon, had a real good knowledge of the truth, volumes of Tabernacle Shadows. And they have, between the two of them, they have quite a large library of the pastor's writings. Brother David and Ray sent them quite a few of the pastor's writings, so they have a pretty good library for themselves. We talked about the three covenants and the sin offering, and they have the understanding that we would on these subjects. And Brother Gilbert Rice has sent his papers there, but they don't agree with his papers on these subjects. And we went to Brother Alexander's home and that night, and that's where they have their meetings, the class meetings on his front porch. And we walked in, there was a big, beautiful chart, one of the colored charts, the silk kind of material, a picture of Brother Russell, a picture of an Albion General Convention, and a picture of an Indian General Convention that they had years and years ago all there. So it's kind of interesting. You come around halfway around the world, and you walk in, there's a chart, and then a picture of the pastor and all this, and you just really... And then everyone's sitting around and barefoot and cross-legged on the floor. It's just kind of interesting.
That's how I usually sit in that meeting.
To fit on there at that meeting, that was basically that. And they had some chairs and benches, and of course they had that they view the prime seats, and they give you flowers, and they loop over your neck and all, and they're just really sweet. And we talked in Leviticus 16 and the covenants and sin offering there. And there were 14 present, and there are 7 consecrated in their class.
Seems to be nearly everywhere about half consecrated and half not from the figures you've given.
Yeah, that's very true. You mentioned that, and that's true. Brother Peters is questioning the thought of the high calling being open because of the layman influence.
I can ask you whether they are over there too. They're popular there. Yeah, you didn't come in contact with them though.
We met one layman brother who came out to one of our meetings. But we understand they have their own classes. In fact, Brother Peters got a lot of the pastor's material through them. But unfortunately, he also questions the high calling because of that influence. So that's sad. Because he has one of the better understandings of the truth there, of the brother we met. But very, very, he's still considering it. So hope to be an encouragement there.
Oh, and he's one that's not even consecrated.
He hasn't. He's one that hasn't consecrated because he's questioning the high calling. Mm-hmm. In fact, he even had Alexander Hislop's Two Babylons there, and he had a long list of other historical books that he wanted to try to get Josephus writings and different things. And he'd also like to get a complete set of the reprints. He only has a partial set. And Brother Alexander, we talked to him about the church state, whether he thought it was future or not, and he feels it's future. And so that was the church-state union. He feels that's still yet ahead of us. And when we asked Brother Alexander how the class understood our discourse on Leviticus 16, he said they would all understand it because they studied the Tabernacle Shadows. And so that would all work out well. And then he gave us a booklet to republish. It's in their language, which is Kannada, and it's a condensed version of the Tabernacle Shadows. It's been condensed down to where it would be within their cost of printing it. It's very old, so we're going to just reprint it here for
them. Tabernacle isn't that big of a book in the first place.
No, but that was basically our understanding. We have it down to where it's pretty thin, like a booklet.
Wonder how you can condense the Tabernacle.
Yeah.
Probably after Atonement Day sacrifices and different things. And so then the next day we spent almost all day with Brother Alexander and Brother Peters and another brother just discussing everything from prophecy, and they were asking about the Dawn organization a little bit, and talked about the reign, and they believe that the 1,000 years has already begun, and Christ has been reigning since 1878. Talked about the four winds, and they feel that loosing of the four winds, Revelation 7, is yet future. They believe in the Elijah picture of the signing of Jordan is yet to transpire. And they said that this fellowship period was their biggest blessing of our visit there. In fact, Brother Alexander, in his broken English, he said to me at the end of the day, he said this visit has been very important. He kind of left it with that, and we think it was partially because we discussed like the 1916 forewords in their application of the second volume and how we would understand this as being a progressive picture with the parallels. And that answered some questions for them that they had had.
Do they work with their young ones very much?
Oh, yes. Yes. In fact, when we get to Kunar, we find that that's where they have a whole children's program. Yeah. And so, yeah, they take a good interest in their kids.
How, do they have separate classes for them?
Yes. Yes. That, but they sit through the regular meetings, too.
Oh.
Brother Alexander, we were asking him about, well, when do you think the church will be complete?
Uh-huh.
And so Brother Alexander gets a smile on his face, and he goes, he was speaking to Brother Peters, and he says, well, it says in Matthew 24 that in the days of Noah, so shall be the days of the Son of Man. And he says, in the days of Noah were 120 years before the flood. It says in the days of the Son of Man started in 1874, so 1994 might be, and so... He was all smiles. He said, we don't know for sure. And we said, well, that's interesting. We've heard that before. So that was kind of cute. We were talking, and Brent had, what did Brent have? Brent had in his Bible a paper, one of George's papers, on one of his talks. Maybe it was the first one. So he gave that to him, and Brother Alexander's eyes just went up. Got really something here to feast on. So he was pretty happy about that. That looked like a pet idea of his. Yeah, he was happy. So Brother Alexander was very excited about, we showed them all the independent, we took a sample of all the independent booklets and tracts. And when they saw all the colors and pictures on the tracts and all, and that we would, you know, help supply them, they were just ecstatic, just ecstatic.
You'd supply the English versions.
English versions. And we told them that we would send them labels with their address so they could label the literature so they would get the responses right there, which is really, well, all we're trying to do is to encourage them to be independent ecclesias, just like here in the United States.
You could have them printed up, like in Chicago, with their address, though.
We could if they ordered a large enough 2,000, but... what we'll send is samples, and we encourage them to pick a couple that they thought would be particularly helpful in their area, and then we could see about quantity.
Yeah.
And they were really excited, really excited. They looked like at the pyramid track, and it was just, he was just...
that green one?
Yeah, that folds out.
Yeah.
He just said, you know, these really get their attention there. So they were pretty excited about that. Excuse me. And then Brother Brent spoke that evening there to the 14 people, to Brother Alexander's, and it was general admonitions on the first and second volumes and loyalty to the truth. And the brother there, upon leaving, gave a very, you know, warm send-off. Brother Peters was actually in tears at the end. And so they saw us off at the bus station the next day. And then we traveled to Mysore. And at Mysore, several brothers came to meet us at the bus depot, and there was very beautiful scenery on the way there. I remember that was kind of outstanding. And Brother Williams is the elder here. And then there was a brother, Dr. Luke. Just kind of interrupting Dr.
Luke.
Dr.
Luke, yeah. And very appropriate.
He's an older brother, and we were very impressed because we went and saw his little shop. And it's right on the street. It's an open front. His wife works with him. She's like a doctor's assistant. And all they have is a pull curtain for the patient's room. And everyone else that sits right there on the steps and on a couple benches. And it's right there on the street. And there's a guy selling food on banana leaves right on in front. And he stays there with that. And we commented. We said, "Now, Dr. Luke, we know that there's many Indian physicians in the United States because they can come over and they can make $90,000 a year." And he says, "Yes." And he says, "I'm needed here." Mm. So, you know, we were really impressed with that spirit, you know, that he was wanted to serve the people there. And he's one of the three brethren that owns their own home. So at least he's able to do well there. And let's see, Brother Williams, he came to the hotel. He's very outgoing. And all the brethren in this class, they speak Canada language, but they also speak, all of them speak English quite well. So there didn't have to be any translation here. They all spoke English, and they have their own little meeting hall that Brother Williams spent $700 of his own money to have constructed. And so it's really nice that they have a little literature depot there that they mail out. Every month they mail out their own literature, and they have a lot of Dom booklets, and they have a lot. He has a fairly good set of the pastor's writings for himself. But there were brethren there that were just begging us for manuals and gems and comments books that they could have in their own sets of volumes. So, and they all read and speak English real well, so that was exciting. And there were seven consecrated there. And there was 15 at the meeting, so once again, you almost have exactly half. And I spoke on the covenants, and all the brethren responded really well to that. They were really excited about these subjects. And they studied the Dawn magazine in their meetings. They don't have any testimony meetings like none of the friends do there. And Brother Williams talked about the differences between Tamil-speaking brethren and Canada-speaking brethren and problems that he was going on and on about different problems with different brethren. And so we just tried to encourage him to study the volumes in their class because it was obvious that the brethren there were really interested in these deep truths, and they were asking for volumes and different things. And so it kind of gave him something to think about because he was under the impression that if you bring someone new to the meeting, the volume would be too deep for them. And so we were just explaining to them that the pastor brings out in the reprints, and then how the friends at in the States where they have special meetings for the newly interested. But then the ecclesia meeting is where the deep truths are presented, because that's where the rest of the ecclesia needs to be set on the deeper truths. And then you just kind of work the new interest in. Instead of keeping the meetings light because you're afraid new interest would come and have a hard time. So he was receptive to that. And the next day there were 20 present at the next day, the meeting there. It was Sunday. And we started meeting at 9:30, and Brent spoke about the life of Jesus, and they really enjoyed that. Then we had fellowship there with the brethren for several hours, and they had a lot of questions about the manner of the resurrection. All about all the different aspects of the church's resurrection and in the worlds and the great company, ancient worldlies, and the whole gamut. They were really excited about that subject. And they had a lot of questions. There's a lot of young brethren there in their early 20s who are studying these things for the first time. They're reading in the first volume, and they were just really thrilled with these things. And encouraging the brethren to read the volumes on their own. And we spent the afternoon with Brother Williams, and he was talking a lot about different problems in the area. And him and Brother Jayapa had been in the same class. In fact, Brother Jayapa brought him into the truth, but now they had divided since 1980. So they are two ecclesias in Mysore now. And then Brother Brent spoke on Israel in the afternoon in the context of the second volume. And he was encouraging that. And then I gave a discourse on the double and parallels. And all except Brother Williams had never heard of them. And they were all very interested.
The parallels.
Because these were his class is very young, and they've been studying the Dawn magazine, so they hadn't gotten into the doubles and the parallels, but they were all very excited in the study. And we would ask questions like, okay, you know, what happened in the year 606 BC? And then they would respond. You know, they would have parts, you know, what do we look for as a parallel in 1874? Well, they would say, all the Lord's presence. You know, then we'd say, well, how about 1878? What's the parallel here? And then Brother Williams would answer. So it was, you know, they got part of it, and yet they were just glued to their seats, an hour and a half on it, and they just, you know, loved it. And then later, at our hotel, the next night before we were leaving, 14 of them came to our hotel room. Brother Williams was there and Brother Luke. Brother Luke's pretty quiet. And Brother Williams just said, we're just so thankful that you've talked on these meaty subjects. He says, we need this strong meat in the ecclesia. He says, is it, you stirred up the minds of these young ones, and they just really enjoyed it, and we just, you know, are just so thankful you spoke on these things. And then as we were leaving, Dr. Luke was shaking Brother Brett's hand, and he says, where is it in the volumes on those doubles that he spoke on last night? So Brent says, well, it's in the second volume. You'll find it in the second volume in the study and all this stuff. I'm going to have to read that. So you kind of leave. You were glad that you stepped out to speak on a deeper subject, at least for the one older ones and to encourage the younger ones, because obviously they're getting the general plan already.
Sounds like they're very humble.
Oh, very receptive. Of course, being white brothers from America, they're...
Look up to you kind of thing, yeah.
It does kind of lend itself.
Yeah.
So that was, it was really exciting. And then they took us, some of the younger brethren the next day had taken a sightseeing, and they had a lot of fellowship all day and night with these younger brethren. They were just full of questions. What do we think about smoking? What do the brethren think about drinking? About elections? What about marriage? And so on and so forth. And kids and everything. I mean, it just, we're really picking our brains. So that was, it was real nice. In their 20s, early 20s. And now here's a little interesting something. Like for an example, we were wondering how much they're grasping. And one of these brothers said, well, I understood everything you were saying yesterday in that study, except that day, April. What does that represent again in the parallel? So you kind of go into the detail on it. But that was good because he picked out something that he didn't quite grasp.
Well, they got to stop and flash their lights at them and go off on the shoulder and just...
They can't show them off. I mean, they can't even push them or...
I never saw anyone do that.
They're sacred, aren't they? They can't be rough with...
Out in the... Way out in the country areas, we saw cows and steers and, of course, bell herd goats and sheep. And then they'll use a little stick to keep them in line, and they'll try to keep them off the road as the truck's going. So like if there's a cow walking across the road and he's just taking his time, they try to get by it before it gets in their way and all, but they'd stop. I mean,
slow railroad train.
Yeah.
Try to get around.
You believe those animals were actually reincarnated human beings?
That's a grandpa.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to believe, but
I didn't realize that was
it. That's why vegetarianism is so big there.
Oh.
So many are vegetarian.
Could be eating your mother, huh?
Yeah. But the other aspect, though, is there are nominal Hindus, and they kind of live out in a way, and they'll use animals to a degree. So I asked the one brother, I said, well, what's the difference in the cows? Because sometimes I see them being used. He says, it's not the cow that's different, it's the Hindu.
that was kind of funny. A lot of wild dogs and cats running around. And the dogs, you know, you look at them and they're all bitten up and all open sores and different things. I mean, you just, you know, you wouldn't want to pet them. You just feel bad for them. But they're all rummaging through the garbage and on the streets and all. But the saddest part is then you see humans right with them rummaging in the garbage. Mm-hmm. They're both digging in the same pile for their dinner. At midnight, I remember we'd like walked around a couple times. It was like at midnight for after a meeting and different things. And Brett and I'd be walking down the street. We just commented, it's like the movie Night of the Living Dead. Because you're just walking down the street and it's dark and there's people all over the sidewalks and just sleeping right on the hard sidewalk, nothing, and then people digging in the garbage and reeking garbage and they're just getting their dinner and it's just, you can hardly believe it. There is disease. There's a lot of very deformed people, but they also build up an immunity from living on the streets all their life.
Yeah.
They can eat things that would certainly we couldn't.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to, you know, keep it, you know, to really imagine it. But so that really smacks you. And, you know, everywhere you went, there's beggars who are all deformed. I mean, you just can't describe it. In one area, we were walking down the road first thing in the morning, and there was a leper sleeping on the road. His whole arm was pure white, and his fingers had fallen off. And he was sleeping in the road in the street. And then we came by about an hour later, and he was just gone. But they mostly have leper colonies or villages. But
do they believe in birth control, Dan?
Indira Gandhi, several years ago, enforced sterilization on the males, and it was enforced, and it wasn't very popular. They were just taking people off the streets and forcing them to be sterilized. But they do believe in birth control, but particularly with the Roman Catholics, they encourage very large families, and then the ignorance of the population is just kind of the way it is.
So they'll never get ahead of that problem.
Their population is pretty out of control. They say that the population density of Bombay is 4 times that of New York City. And Calcutta is worse. And you can see it because all the streets have people living on them. I mean, on the sidewalk, there's just people living on the sidewalk that are never inside a building. That's their whole life. They cook there, they go to the bathroom there, they sleep there, they have their children there. That's it, that's where they are. So there's a lot of poverty in that way, and you just got to look past it in order to keep functioning with what you're there to do. But it is depressing. You give the money to the beggars. If you give them 2 rupees, you're giving them the equivalent of 16 cents, and they're ecstatic.
Did you do that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Whenever they came up. You're giving them 16 cents, and you think about it, 16 cents, and they're ecstatic. What a millionaire could do over there. He could go around making 1 million people happy over there that never even been his pocketbook.
Mm.
But of course, they wouldn't think of doing that. So, that was in Mysore. And they gave us a set of carved elephants for gifts, little wooden elephants. And they were all very, very sweet, brother. And they, again, give you flowers. And, well, we hung them up in the hotel room because they were jasmine, and they were so fragrant that they make the whole room smell like jasmine. It was kind of nice.
Refreshing.
But me and Brett would look at each other and say, would you walk downtown Royal Oak like that? So it was kind of funny. We were laughing. In Bombay, the first night at their convention, they gave us laurels or flowers, and they gave the Israeli consulate and his wife laurels or flowers. And at the end of it, Brent took off the flowers, and we're going home for the night. And he said to one of Brother Barsi's daughters, he says, can I take off these flowers? She says, oh yes. So they took them off. And then he just thought he'd be nice, you know, and he put the flowers on her and said, well, here, why don't you have them? And she goes, and all of a sudden all these people were horrified. And she goes, you don't do that because that's what you do to symbolize marriage. So we had a good laugh on that. So we
were
take them off real quick. So everything's funny. Everybody a good laugh.
Dustin.
That was kind of funny. So then we went the next day to Kunar, and Kunar is 7,000 feet high in the mountains. Like you're driving through plains where there's a lot of water and vegetation, and all of a sudden you come and there's just these huge mountains that rise right up, and they look all covered with jungle, and there's winding roads up there. You take the bus up, and there's wild monkeys sitting on the side of the road just watching at you, and we saw elephants working in the field, men working the elephants in the fields, pulling down lumber, and then that was real pretty, a lot of waterfalls, you know, right in the middle of the jungle there, you're driving by, and so we went up in Kunar, and it was pretty cool. We both caught colds up there, but there's two classes there, and the one class was started by Brother Daniels, and the two elders there are Brother George and Brother Das.
I noticed it there because it says we conduct service and prayer meetings. This is at Kunar. Yeah, where you are now. Well, what do they mean then by prayer meetings if you say they don't have testimony meetings? They mean just they open and close with prayer?
Basically, that's it, yeah. Yeah, they have prayers during their service. And all the Indian brethren pray very, very long. And most of it's in a foreign language. But they all pray very long.
How long do they say? Minutes? About 5 minutes?
About 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a long time when you think about standing there and listening to what you can't understand. But they are very specific on the name of Jehovah. That's very important to them because it's interesting because there's a million and one gods in that country with a million and one names, and so their Jehovah is the one true God, and they're very definite on that.
Yeah, so they must have Jehovah's Witnesses over there.
Yeah.
And that must add to the problem of them getting...
It might very well. But they specifically use Jehovah's name in all their prayers and whatnot, and they're big on that. And it's interesting that almost all the ecclesias, when they're done with their closing prayer, they recite the Lord's Prayer together. They all recite the Lord's Prayer.
Waffle.
Do they?
Yeah, we were the first time I've ever been anywhere in Waffle when they did that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And then at the end of the Lord's Prayer, the elder who prayed then kind of goes on like he's adding a blessing at the end of that, and then everyone closes with a little couple of words I never did understand.
Amen.
A little bit longer. Maybe that's what it boils down to. And in some of the classes, they have a creed that they read. And they all read and recite this creed. And if
you know what's contained?
Well, I have it in English. I don't have it here with me, but it's nothing objectionable. But they just read off. It's almost like a list of their beliefs kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they all recite it together. They don't do it everywhere, but some of the places that's what they do. That was a little different. But at Kunar, they just got done studying the third volume in class, and they're studying the second volume study in their class. And they have 15 consecrated, and there are 30 in the class, just half again. And we arrived there by taxi. And the taxi isn't the type of taxi you think of in a taxi, it's a little Fiat. And there's three of us in the front seat, and it's a stick shift, and there's four in the back seat. And we were driving down the road, our driver was Hindu, and he's got all these pictures of like Krishna and whatnot on the front, and things hanging down, and incense burning. And then he plugs in this tape, and this tape happens to be a bunch of Western rock and roll music. So you're really floored by this guy.
What was it, you know?
It was a medley of tunes. That medley where they're all snapping their fingers and there's one beat and they play all these different songs.
You
mean
like tune in fast or something?
No, it's this other thing that they have. I can't remember right offhand, but it's anyhow. So we were kind of laughing at that. And often it's a holiday. It's a Hindu holiday. And we were told on this Hindu holiday that everyone who makes a living by a profession, they have to have their instrument by which they make a living blessed by a Hindu priest. They sprinkle blood or ashes on it. They said even the doctors have their scalpels and everything sprinkled with this. And so we're driving down the road, and right in the middle of the road is a little Hindu temple out in the middle of nowhere. And he pulls up next to the Hindu temple. He pulls up right next to the doorway, and he stops. And the priest comes out, and he's got makeup all over his face, and he's dressed pretty wild. And you can look inside. There's this little idol inside this little temple. And he comes out, and the driver, who's Hindu, gives him some money and some incense. And he runs. The priest runs back inside and breaks his incense on a pan, and he sets it on fire, and he waves it before this idol. And then the driver and a couple of Hindus get out of the back, and they're standing there, and the priest comes back out, and he has a little silver tray with a bunch of crumpled up leaves that he sets on fire, and then a little something else we couldn't quite make out it was in a little pot on the tray. And taxi driver and the other Hindus, they pat out the flames on the leaf real quick, and they pop a bunch of it in their mouth. And then the priest dabs them with something out of his pot, and then he goes around to the front of the car. Because the car is the taxi driver's means of making a living, and he sprinkles a bunch of stuff on the grill of the car and blesses it. And then he goes back in the temple, and they hop back in the car and on down the road. So that was really, I mean, one of the unusual little things that happened to you. And so when we arrived at Kunar, there was the two-day convention, and they planned in the convention that there were 9 to be immersed. And they range in age from 17 to 40 years old. And several of them had expressed interest to consecrate 2 years earlier, but yet the elders told them, encouraged them to wait until they had fully understood the truth more. So we were impressed with that, because it's not just like a family thing to consecrate, and they were encouraging, you know, that way they were encouraging to really understand what they were doing before they did it. And then when they knew American Brethren were coming, they thought, well, this would be the perfect time. So Brother Brent gave the discourse, baptismal discourse, and then I did the immersion in the stream. So that was really, really exciting. Mm. Really exciting. And they, the Indian Brethren, just thought, they were just ecstatic over that they had American Brethren there for the service. And so they tied that right into the convention. And Brother George had consecrated in 1962, and Brother Das had consecrated in 1955, and they have 3 meetings. I think it's in that booklet there that they gave us. They have 3 meetings a week with the young people at night, and they study in the reprints, and the young people want to meet, and they study in the reprints
twice a week.
Yeah. And then they have their Sunday meeting, where they meet and they study the volumes.
Daily classes during vacation.
There had a young brother who consecrated, who was a sign painter, that's his living. And he had big, beautiful, real large, beautiful charts of the pyramids, the tabernacle, and the divine plan of the ages that he's done and put a lot of work into, and they have them all hanging up in their hall. And they have several sets of reprints there that they put to use, and they're really excited to get the pastor's more of the pastor's literature there. So in fact, we saw Brother Brad's reprints there, and when they found out Brother Brad was from my class, they were doubly excited about that. I thought that was really something. And the young people just really, really they'll get you sitting there and just get you talking on a subject, and they'll go, "Yes, brother, yes, brother." They'll just be so just excited to hear anything you've got to say. Oh, yes, brother. I mean, they're so anxious to believe. The older brethren, of course, are more reasonable along those lines, but I mean, the kids there were just so excited. You know, it just really thrills you that you can create that much excitement with somebody. So, let's see, we gave a little lesson on the fruits of the Spirit that evening, and then the next day at the convention there were 40 in attendance, and Brent spoke on an overview of the truth in the second volume. Then I spoke on the covenants there, and the elders said that this was the way they always understood the covenants and all, and they said the young people would understand. So they had gone over these things, and then they had the young people do skits and songs. And the skits were interesting, like the young people had skits like on part of Solomon's life, part on David's life and different things, and they would act it all out. And it was nice because we could see how it complemented the children felt that they could have a participation in the weekend, so it was easier for them to participate in the adult meetings because they had their own time. And then all the young people sat very quietly through all the meetings. They were sitting on hard wooden benches and all weekend long. So we were kind of impressed. And then they even had the little kids, 4 years old, get up in front and with a microphone and recite scripture. Mm. Like recite all the 23rd Psalm and whatnot. And it was nice because it was showing that they were trying to bring up their kids in in the proper way. And they were pretty cute. And then they were, the next day, there were 7 brothers that were immersed and 2 sisters. And it was in a rain, it was raining out, drizzling, and it was pretty cold, and it was a mountain stream that was swollen, so it was really dark brown because all the mud churned up. And it was underneath about a 6-foot waterfall where it kind of pooled up. And then several of the brothers got in the water with me because it was all big rocks underneath the water. So they had to help the candidate step from rock to rock. And one of the sisters was 40 years old, but yet they all wanted to be baptized. And they got down, the water was up to our chest. And some of them, the water was right up to their nose. They were so short. So they were really
terrified.
They were kind of terrified of the water. They'd be holding their nose and all, but they were brave in it. Because I don't think they do a lot of swimming there. They were kind of weren't used to it. And there was one brother, Brother Abraham, speaks 3 languages, good knowledge of the truth. And he's 18 years old, and his parents weren't in the truth. And he had come out of a nominal church, and he consecrated, and he was pretty badly deformed. He's handicapped. And we were just really touched with his immersion because it really, it was just really extra nice, just the way it all kind of worked out.
Is there many deformed brothers?
No, it really wasn't.
What's the terrain there like? Are there really tigers that are running around wild, and cobras and all of the other things you hear about in India? Did you see any of this? Or
the only cobra I saw was in a basket on the street. Some guy wanted me to pay some outrageous price to watch it dance by the flute. but there, brothers do talk. There certainly are the wild snakes.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how many tigers there are in India.
Bengal tiger, yeah, that's noted, or used to be noted as, India, like the eagle was in the United States.
I really don't know. We went through a game reserve, and like I said, we saw elephants, we saw the monkeys and water buffaloes and whatnot, but there certainly looked like there was a lot of areas that were wilderness enough that they certainly could, be there still.
Mm-hmm. I was just curious.
Yeah. And the water buffaloes have a good name. We see them all down. As soon as it gets hot, they all head to the local mud hole, and you see them all down there buried in the mud except for their snoop. That's their pastime. Kind of funny. But it was kind of interesting that after the immersion service, they asked me to give a welcome address for the new brethren.
Mm.
So we kind of had to use our imagination there. Brent had given the baptismal discourse, and then they were immersed. Now you went back, and there was a welcome address.
How long did they expect you to talk for?
They kind of left it open. I think we spoke for about 30 minutes, and we just introduced them. We just quoted all the scriptures that apply to the new family. You have new hopes. You have new citizenship. You have new promises, and you have a new family, new responsibilities, you're a new creature, and these type of things, and just kind of welcome them that way. And then we lined them up in the front, and that's when we invited all the brethren then to come up and greet them with the handshake. And they hadn't seen that done before, so they thought that was kind of unique.
Started a new custom.
Yeah.
They thought that was kind of unique in that class. So then after that, the seven brothers who had been immersed had to give a 15-minute discourse. So they all got up. Some of them gave them in English, which was a real trick for them. And then others gave it in their own language. They couldn't speak English good enough. But every time one got up to speak, if we couldn't understand the language, Brother George would lean over and tell us what he was speaking on. Well, some of them spoke on the salt of the earth. Yeah, the salt of the earth. What's the lesson there? Some of them spoke on the life of Abraham, and so on and so forth. And but Brother George told me they were getting all their thoughts. They researched their thoughts from the reprints. And so their talks were compiled from the reprint.
Did he have these talks?
Yeah.
Is that usual?
No,
that's
two sisters.
The two sisters who were baptized didn't give talks.
They weren't required to do anything?
No.
Is that usual every time there's an immersion? Or just peculiar?
Well, their philosophy is, and the same with the skips and having the children recite, is that they felt that by breaking the young people into public speak when they were in their 20s and 30s and would go out for public address, they would not be afraid and they would do a better job in a truth presentation. And so they encouraged them with these little ways earlier on so that from a young age they would get over stage fright, so to speak, so they'd be more effective in their public witness. So that was their reasoning behind it. And then we could also see how it really got them, the young people, more involved in a good manner that way. So it was kind of interesting. That was real interesting. And let's see. They have a little organ, little pump organ. You pump the back of it and play with one hand. And they have guitar, and they have bongos. Type drum, and that's what they use for their hymns. And they never heard of Hymns of Dawn. They didn't know they existed. So they had Jehovah Witnesses hymns that they had translated into English. They're very simple hymns, and when you read the lyrics, there's certainly nothing wrong with them. They're very simple hymns.
They will be O Kingdom time.
Yeah, and praise Jehovah and this type of thing in His kingdom.
Nothing
is
the hope.
No. But when we said that there was hymnals, their Hymns of Dawn, and they said, do they have music? No. They'll say, yeah. Oh, send them. They're just so excited to know that there were hymns from that the brother used.
Now, presumably, they could just have one for the pianist and the rest. Like, would the brother even read music? They could just have the word books, do you think?
Well, like, there's two that play guitar, and then several that play the organ, can play it. They take turns. But, and then some of the sisters were singing solo. Hymns in front of the brother.
Do with a few, with the music.
Yeah.
They have good voices.
Yeah, for as Indian style, they sing very high. Very high. Very high. So it is it's different.
Maybe they'll be able to sing.
Yeah. Well, they could play them high.
They had one of the songs, but it was a song that we received from one of the churches. It's a song in the church. I think, what is it? Great is our faithfulness. Maybe that's, well, it was one. I said, they're singing in their own language. And I said, well, that's a Don, a hymn from Don hymnal. And they said, no, that might be. They said, but this is from from the Anglican church.
Yeah, maybe they thought we had all totally different hymns, whereas quite a lot of ours are adapted, some of the words are
right.
Changed, but there are a lot.
So they were pretty excited about hearing that. Then, so we left Kunar, and then we just went down to Tambiator, which is on the plains. So we went back down into the heat. And there we met Brother Joseph, who is quite knowledgeable. He has good understanding of Hebrew and Greek, and he's done extensive studies in languages, and he goes on pilgrim trips to serve other classes. And he speaks very good English. And he wants to go full-time service in several years, but he has six or seven children. So he kind of has a difficult way ahead of him on how to feed them. So, but that's his ambition. And in Kombiapur, we spent one night there, and we addressed their class. And the elder of that class is a brother Jacob, and he speaks only a little English. He has a very hard time reading English, so his son, who reads English, helped him get through the volumes. So that's how he picked up his concepts, and then Brother Joseph, you know, helped him expand on that.
Well, that would be hard to have
him through the volumes. Yeah. And there are 60 consecrated in that class, they say, and they meet on Sundays. And he told me that there were 10 there that had read the volumes. 10 in the class who had read the volumes, and that they believed in all 6 volumes, and that the Lord was reigning. And I spoke on the ransom, and Brent spoke on truth, the principles of truth, to about 45 brethren. And the way they assembled them was, this isn't their normal meeting, but what they had made for that night was, they were up in an apartment, and the apartment had a balcony that opened out. It was in the hallway of the staircase, and it had a balcony jutting out. So they set up a table on the balcony, and then they had 2 rooms that opened up off the hall. And so all the brethren, all the sisters on one side, all the brothers on the other side, all sat on the floor and filled the entire rooms on both sides. Then they were sitting all up the steps of the next landing, and then we stood out on the balcony. And that's how you dressed, and there was 45 of them there.
Was it usual to separate brothers from sisters?
Well, it's kind of interesting now that you say that, because at Kunar, they both sat on opposite sides of the rooms. There, they sat on opposite sides. In Trichy, they sat on opposite sides.
Huh.
So now you mentioned that in several places that was, and in fact, in another, in Madras, they sat on opposite sides. So yeah, that seems to be a general way. You mentioned that, yeah? And all the sisters cover their heads. They all cover their heads. They all wear the saris. They just take the part of the sari that goes over the shoulder and just pull up. So it's a lot more convenient. They don't have to worry about looking for their chapel cap. And so we had left there. We left Kambiatore, spent the one night there, and then the next day, before we left Kambiatore, the next day we met with their elders, Brother Jacob. And that night they came to our hotel room, several of them, and stayed all night talking. And we went back and forth. And then Brother Jacob took us to his home, and he has a very, very, very humble, very humble little home in a pretty destitute area. And so we were impressed there. He brought out all these old charts. He had charts of Ezekiel's temple, the tabernacle, and the plan, and all these different charts from all over. You know, he was very excited, and he was proud of his little library there. And we had a lot of talk on prophecy, and he sees a future church state system, which is kind of interesting. You pick on different things, and it's interesting to hear his thoughts. And then that rest of that day, we took a bus down to Trichy, and Brother Joseph accompanied us. And after they had their own hall where it says Bible Students Association established 1919. And they have a big electric horn, PA horn, out on the street. And it's in a Roman Catholic district, but it's a real slum area. And they broadcast their program service right out on the street.
Everything that's said is
over the loudspeaker. They just broadcast it out over the loudspeaker. And they have a tape player, and they have a tape that they recorded at a convention years and years ago of these sisters singing. And in fact, it was the sisters singing who had sung in Kunar that we heard. And they had a tape of them singing, and they blast that out over the loudspeaker, so everyone in the streets are listening to this service. It sounds like it would be really rude, but in India, whenever someone plays music, it's always at full volume, no matter what they're playing, day or night. I mean, it's really a noise pollution. So they're right in step, really. And they said they have a lot of flack with the Roman Catholics down there. At night we were walking back through the maze of these streets amongst all these homes, and they would have like a big statue of Mary with little baby Jesus, and all got crowns and robes, and then they have big neon lights right over them. So they make little temples out of for Mary and Jesus worship, just like, and then the Hindus across the sea had their little temples for their gods, and it's just really, really sick. So when we got to Trichy there, that's where a brother owned his own press, and they print that panel booklet. And see, Brent spoke in the morning on the truth in the volumes to about 50 brethren, and they say that there are, one brother says there was 130 there, and then another brother said there was 80. So it's almost like you have to take it with a grain of salt. We saw 50, and they say there was quite a number who weren't in attendance, but they are out in the surrounding areas, friends of the truth. But they claim that there's about 60 brethren there who are consecrated. And in the evening it rained, and so there was only about 20 brethren who came out. And we spoke on the doubles and the parallels, and we used a little chalkboard. And they really received it nicely. And there's four elders in that class. And one elder came up to Brent after I had spoke on the doubles, and he had tears in his eyes, and he said to Brent, he said, I was a student of S.R. Gilbert, and I haven't heard a prophecy study in years. And he was just so happy. And so when we got talking with these brethren, they don't cooperate with the other Indian Dawn brethren because of the financial problems that they had with the committee in the past. So they had just had anything to do with them. And so they grilled us on what we were coming there for to offer, financial aid or literature or what, and we told them specifically and solely literature. Then they opened their arms to us and were really receptive.
And here they just don't want any part of financial aid.
Mm-hmm. Right, because the financial aid from brothers from America and Europe had caused the problems in the past, and the brethren just got burned by it.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't handle it. So they just want strictly literature, but they do want the literature.
Yeah.
They're really excited. So they came to us and they said, well, we'd like to have four sets of volumes, one for each of the elders who could read the English. No one else in the class could read the English.
None of them has a set already?
They didn't have a set. They asked for four sets. So it's hard to really determine exactly what they have.
So you took a lot of literature over there with you then?
We took sample literature, and now we're going to mail the literature to them. We were telling them we were compiling the information, so for each class we compiled how many English reading consecrated brethren were there, and we took a slight inventory of their class library, and with that information we're now going to round out their class libraries, and then hopefully send to each of the English reading consecrated brothers their own personal set of study books.
Mm-hmm.
So that hopefully then they would all be able to study on their own that way.
So then previously they did have affiliation with some Dawn connection over there?
Well, the Dawn brother and Brother Pollock had been over there, and Brother Fay had been over there. Brother Gilbert Rice has been there twice. And Brother Ray Krupa and David Bruce have just been over there 2 years ago, and Carl and Shirley had been there 12 years ago, and then Lois and Alice had been there what, 8-9 years ago. But the Dawn Northwest Committee for India, they have been sending the Dawn magazine over and some literature, and they have helped in the past with some tracts. But there's a desperate need for complete sets of the pastor's writings, and even volumes, as this attests, and manuals and gems and different things. And when they saw the booklets and tracts, they were just thrilled.
Mm-hmm.
So that's hopefully what we'll be able to assist in. So, before we left Trichy, we went to Bangalore, and we met with Brother Daniel, and Brother Daniel was very mature. He didn't get into all the speaking of the problem so readily. know, he was very, he was very conciliatory about not mentioning names too much and different things and problems in the past. He was more speaking on the facts type of a thing. He wanted to speak on spiritual subjects, but was very professional on that line. And he had started the class in Kunar, and he was very proud of the fact that they were studying the volumes in that class, because that's what he had instituted. And then in his class they studied the volumes, and he appreciates all six volumes. And we had fellowship with him for several days, with him and his wife. His wife consecrated, and he has three daughters. All three daughters are consecrated, and they all married consecrated brothers. So he was very blessed there in that way. And one of his son-in-laws is the son of the late Brother Sundararajan. Just water would be good. And in fact, he is in a little bit of this brother, young brother Sundararajan, is in letter contact with brother Jim DeGroot a little bit still. So it's kind of funny, everywhere you go, a little something would crop up. You'd see a picture of Brother Pollock here, you'd see a picture of Alice and Lois in saris, you know, at another place. Here this brother is riding to Brother Jim DeGroot on occasion. Go to another place and Carl Hagensick had sent, you know, a set of reprints to this brother. It was just kind of interesting. They mentioned some names of German brethren who had contributed there, and so it was kind of interesting these things would crop up. And Brother Daniel writes a lot of the articles for that Trichy newsletter they publish every month. He's a large contributor, and so is Brother Joseph. And then that night Brent spoke on the volumes, second volume, to about 10 brethren. And then we spoke on Matthew 18. Because of all the different divisions they've had and personality problems, we're just impressed that a lot of the problems just hadn't been handled right. And the personality problems, but like they all say, they don't split over doctrine. Doctrinally, all the brethren agreed, it's just basically personality problems they had. And so we kind of spoke on this, and it was received quite well. And we're remembering in Bangalore that there are four ecclesias in that one city, too.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, we were able to relate that to them so they wouldn't feel that we were being too critical. That we certainly have problems here. And so let's see, after we visited with Brother Daniel for several days, we went and visited with Brother Fernandez, who's in Bangalore, and in his home, that's where they hold meetings, and he has probably the most complete library in all of India, but he has it at his home, and Brother Fernandez,
yeah,
which is Charles Suresh's father.
Yeah. Oh, his father. Oh.
Yeah. And Charles Suresh and his wife live right behind them in the same compound.
What's Charles Suresh's name?
Suresh is his middle name. It's Charles Suresh Fernandez.
Yes.
So, which is the father?
Brother Fernandez. They call the son Suresh. They call him by his middle name.
Mm-hmm.
So, when you say Brother Charles Suresh, you're thinking that's his last name. It's not his middle name. So, Brother Charles Suresh has a real good knowledge of the truth. Very, very, very bright. Very bright. He has a degree in his teaching biology. And he took extensive notes. His home, and that's where they hold meetings for his their class there. And we asked Brother Suresh, his son, he said they don't have a specific elder in that class. But Brother Suresh is the one who leads the meetings and explains the truth to the rest of the friends there. And talked with Brother Fernandez about the sin offering and New Covenant for about 4 hours. And then they had us outline Revelation 12, because Suresh is starting a Revelation study. He's taking a class through Revelation. He's starting. He's only in about the first chapter, and he had a lot of questions. So we outlined Revelation 12, and then over the next several days, he assigned me to speak on Revelation 17, Revelation 6, outlined the first five chapters of Revelation, and we had a lot of discussion and open fellowship on Revelation 20. So he was looking for fuel for their his time.
I have a question. When I'm trying to set this in perspective, here you are halfway around the world and they are throwing you these very heavy duty topics to speak on, and you are not, you know, at home in your, when you go home at night, you're in a strange place. I'm just wondering how you were able to function. I mean, you know, and be sharp, be, you know, mentally alert and physically feel good and everything, and in strange surroundings, strange food, strange everything. I mean, did you find that a problem, or did you adapt pretty well to it?
Well,
I mean, it seems like this is putting your whole being to the ultimate test. You're in a foreign country, and that, you know, you're being asked to speak on very heavy duty topics, and it just seems like it would, for me, it would be a real problem just to even function in an environment like that, it would seem.
Well, it's easier to speak to them than it would be to speak on it here.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a lot easier to speak to that group of 40 there on the subject than it would be to speak at Chicago on it, for example.
Yeah.
But regardless of all, I think the Lord added this special blessing because we were geared for that. Every day you're just giving and trying to comprehend their situation.
Mm-hmm.
But yet when your adrenaline gets going, you're geared for the trip.
Yeah.
That's what you want to do, and you want to be used, and the Lord added his blessing, and sometimes I think we could have been sharper on occasion, but overall, though, we're just thankful that the Lord provided that. And like to sit down and outline Revelation 12, I mean, any one of us here could outline Revelation 12,
mm-hmm.
to, you know, quite satisfactorily, which is a lot more than what they have. But we have the benefits here because our brethren speak on it, and we have notes, and we've studied it,
But like you get into Revelation 6, you have the different colored horses, mm-hmm. you know, throughout the gospel age as they change colors. There's a lot of history that goes with that, and a lot of thought. It just seems like,
well,
Revelation 17, I mean, that is no, you know, what you might call a real simple thing to speak on, I wouldn't think. There's a lot of other things that you have to bring into this picture, a lot of history and facts and things like that.
We derived a lot of benefit from the class notes on Revelation, which I had studied previously, and Frank's and Gene's. So a lot of those thoughts, which I didn't originate, though, make sense. So we're able to present it and tie in where the paths are common. From Revelation 17, our class had just finished studying, tying it into the second volume study before we left.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of nice. Our minds were refreshed on it.
That was helpful to you.
It's been real helpful.
Yeah.
So
okay.
That all kind of overruled nicely.
Yeah.
And because some of them had questioned Revelation 12 from the aspect of the man-child being Jesus, because the nominal view there. So that was one of the things that we, you know, wanted to really clarify for them. And in Revelation 6 with the horse rider, many thought that's Jesus because he has the crown on his head and all. He starts
went out to conquer.
Went out to conquer. So of course they could bring out the man with sin aspect. So then they could really, I mean, they were just all drinking it up, and that's what they assigned. So
mm-hmm.
you're happy to
mm-hmm.
to help them on that. And so those brethren really drank in a lot of truth there. They had a deep understanding. And let's see, when we spoke there, there was about 25 brethren who stayed for about 4 hours in question meeting, open questions on all sorts of different subjects. Yeah, well, they're excited that there's a brother in here that traveled halfway around the world just to see their little ecclesia. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the way they all look at it. And there's 13 consecrated there in Brother Fernandez's class. And there's about 35 in the class who attend. Some speak Tamil and some speak Kannada. Brett spoke on the In That Day prophecies concerning Israel. And then they had me speak in Revelation 1 through 6, particularly the 6th chapter, verse by verse. And let's see. Then from there, they had asked us that they had arranged a public meeting several days hence, and we were planning to go on. We didn't plan to stay there that long, but they had it all set. They rented a hall. They had printed up these flyers, and they had chosen the subject on the end time prophecies and the prophecies concerning the Lord's return. And so we said we would stay then. And so we had to change some of our plans, which is another reason for not going to Calcutta. It gave us more time there. So in the meantime, we went and visited another sister who has meetings in her home. And there's a little class with an elder who's been in the truth for 16 years. And so we went to their class that she wasn't home. So we met her children who were both consecrated. And they took us into their meeting hall upstairs. They have a picture of Brother Russell. They have the volumes and several of the pastor's writings. And they have a chart, a picture of Jerusalem. And in, on the front of the room, it says in letters over the door, Bethel. So it was kind of interesting. And they have meetings there every Sunday. So that was... that was pretty exciting. And they requested literature. And then we also met Brother Sundararajan. Excuse me, not Brother Sundararajan, Brother Sanandam. And Brother Sanandam had been an elder in a class who had been translating the Dawn in several articles into a local language. But through Brother Gilbert Rice's papers, he has changed his position. He no longer feels the church has a share in the sin offering, and he feels the church is under the new covenant. And we had, Brent and I had a 3-hour study with him, and he's very convinced in his position. And just 3 weeks ago, he started attending Brother Fernandez and Brother Sharef's class. Well, about a month previously, he started attending their class, because the class he had been in, they asked him to step down. Position. Well, they say it's position. He says it's something else, so we really don't know, to honestly say. But he has been teaching. They're using him as a teacher in Brother Fernandez and Brother Sharef's class now. And one of the days we were there, he asked to speak after we had spoken, and he wanted to speak on the sin offering with his total understanding, so they allowed him, and he addressed the whole class in his understanding of the sin offering. And we talked to Brother Suresh and Brother Fernandez about it, and they just pretty much acted like it wasn't much of a problem. So we were kind of disappointed. And so we were just asking what their understanding was, and Brother Suresh says, well, he says, if anyone really wants to know the truth, they'll come and ask me, and then I can set them straight. They didn't see a need or a distinction of why he should be teaching, and they don't have any elders in the class. So,
you know, is the Charles Suresh an elder?
He says he's not an elder. He was the one who told us there's no elders in the class, but yet he leads the meeting. He does the teaching.
That's not an elder either.
He says, but Charles, we asked him, he said there's no elders in the class. It's hard to
understand. They have no elections, or?
Apparently they don't have the elections. They were very surprised that Brett and I were elders because we were so young. They said that's just unheard of in India. You have to almost be white-haired. So, you know, that might be part of the reason. I don't know. We did meet one elder who was 33 in Madras. He was the oldest individual in the class, and he was an appointed an elder by an elder from another class to lead the meeting for him.
Very old. He's in
his 30s.
Yeah,
he has no white hair.
No, it's not the hoary head. So that was kind of interesting there. And so Brother Sanatadam, that was just an area where Brother Gilbert Rice's papers are being distributed through India, but they have a Bangalore mailing address stamped on it. So Brother Gilbert Rice is sending his papers to Bangalore, to someone there, and then they've been distributing it to other classes, and it has a Bangalore stamp on it, but not a return address. It's Gilbert Rice's return address. But they've been mailed from Bangalore. And none of the other ecclesias are appreciating receiving it because they don't agree with it. But it's coming somewhere in Bangalore. We asked in Bangalore, no one said that it was coming from them.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting. So then, from there, let's see. We went to a Brother Alexander's home in Bangalore that night, and he has a little class, and they study in the Kannada language. And Brother Fernandez and Brother Shrestha's class, they study basically in the Tamil language, but they do cooperate with each other. And in this home, they've been meeting in this home, which is no bigger than your combined kitchen and dinette here. They've been meeting in that home for 35 years.
That's had, the whole house?
No, excuse me, not 35 years, for 52 years. They've been meeting in that home for 52 years. Is that right?
From 32.
I have written down in my notes they've been meeting this house for 52 years. And I'm just wondering if it's 1952 and it's 30 some odd years. I said 35 years. Regardless, 35 years at least, they've been meeting in that home every week. They've had meetings there. So you kind of give you a sense of flavor when you come in there, and you know there's been a lot of prayer and study going on there. And so Brent and I both spoke to them about trials in the church and on Matthew 18 and different things because of problems they've had in the past. And they received it very nicely. There were 15 there present. And there's a Brother Peters there, not the same as the earlier Brother Peters in Bangalore. This Brother Peters, he's studying, and he's an older brother, and he's very, very sharp. Very sharp, speaks very good English, and we were, I mentioned him because we were very impressed with this brother. And then we had a meeting the next morning at our hotel with Brother Jayappa and a Brother Prasad, who's a doctor. And they came to visit in the morning. Now, Brother Jayappa lives in Mangalore. Excuse me, Brother Jayappa lives in Mysore. But yet he travels to Bangalore every first week of the month. And on that weekend, and he goes to 8 different homes and conducts 8 different meetings in and around Bangalore. Mm-hmm. And then he travels back home where he has his own ecclesia in Mysore. And so he says that he's in full-time service with all his activities. And he said that they distributed tens of thousands of tracts that he's paid to get and distributed on their own. He's been super busy. And Brother Jayappa says he serves over 200 brethren scattered all over the state of Canada in his travels. And they're not all consecrated, but they're well-wishers and some would be consecrated. And he says he travels all over to meet them. And he was wanted us to go with them. To several of them who just didn't have the time. You feel bad because they're really, that would be so important for them. You know, that would really give them credibility.
Yeah.
But, he quoted scriptures left and right. He really knew his Bible. He had a real good understanding. But he had a funny little quirk, and his little quirk is that Christ was literally 3 days in the grave and was crucified on Wednesday. And there was a number of brethren who think that. Kind of a funny little quirk, and we presented some of scriptural arguments on it being otherwise, and they'd never heard them before, so gave them some food for thought.
You mean as opposed to the parts of 3 days?
Yeah. They take that one scripture in Matthew about Jonah.
Mm-hmm. 3 days and 3 minutes.
And then they say that he was crucified on Wednesday. So that's kind of a little gold quirk there. And he was very excited to get some literature. He brought a whole stack of literature himself. It was all very old, but it was his own writing, just like this first volume you see here with his address on it, Brother Jayapa Preacher. He's got his address on these things, which is kind of neat.
Oh.
And then that afternoon, that night actually, we then had the public meeting, and we were told there at that public meeting, let's see, there was 60 people at the hall, and we spoke on the assigned subjects, and we found out that a sister by the name of Sister Rachel, she had brought a good half of the brethren there of her own witnessing.
Hmm.
Now the next night we visited a little class that Sister Rachel had started, and it was in a hall. And I'd like to read a little letter here from Sister Rachel, and I'll read it for the recorder's benefit. She gave it to us, and it, this Sister Rachel is just the dearest thing. First, I'll say that she has a badly deformed foot, and she had a terrible time getting around, but it doesn't slow her up at all. She says, "Dear brethren in Christ, by the grace of God Almighty and His only Son, Jesus Christ, I have been blessed with a true Christian life from the very age of 7 and 8. In spite of attending the professed Church of Christians, I had believed in the existence of one Almighty God and Mighty God." Bringing out Jesus. "The truth of the Bible really dawned on me when Brother S.R. Gilbert was conducting house Bible studies. This was at the time of the beginning of my career as a pharmacist. I was the only one in my family to have realized the true teachings of the Bible. My devotion to spreading the gospel to outsiders was very much limited because of my career. After attending Dawn Bible student meetings, my knowledge of Bible has increased by God's grace. But later, after my retirement, that is 7 years ago," and they retired 58, so she's 65, "I have been, by God's grace and kindness, able to serve Him full time. Depending upon the availability of interested persons for women, I conduct 2 Bible studies on Mondays, 3 on Tuesdays, 3 on Wednesdays, and I go to the hospital on Thursdays and Fridays to 2 places, and on Sunday I too visit hospitals. These persons are in deep appreciations of the Dawn Bible truths. Last year, November," and so what she's saying, when she goes to the hospital, she's giving comfort and consolation to the patients.
What is she studying?
No. Mm-hmm. "Last year, November 1983, a Pastor William of the Church of Christ invited me to visit their poor villages. I visited nearly 10 villages to spread the good news of the Bible. This year, between April 23rd to May 21st, he had again invited me to visit their new villages, and I visited more than 12 villages. The people in the villages are extremely poor and widowed, but their hearts were very receptive to the truth. We request that you brothers kindly remember me and those interested in the truth in your prayers to God Jehovah. Of recently I have been unwell, and there is this constant presence of Satan's snares and hurdles everywhere I turn. So kindly do pray for me, as I will be remembering you in all my prayers. May God bless to be with you in all your efforts. With warm Christian love and affections, your sister in Christ, Rachel Phillips." So it was kind of nice at the end of the talk there, and she had asked us again. She assigned the discussion on, she wanted one of us to speak on the Day of Judgment, and another one of us to speak on the resurrection to this group, and there were about 25 that she had assembled for this meeting. And so at 2 of the meetings, she had actually assembled over 50 brethren. just from her efforts alone. And Brother Suresh was telling us that it's all in her efforts that she gathered that many there. And she told us that if we ever come back to India, to plan a week with her so she could take us to all these villages, to all these little classes that she has. So if any brother go over to India, that would certainly be one of the things that he would tell him, that, you know, be sure to allow her a couple days so that she could take you around. And then she gave us each a little bit of candy at the end, some chocolate. And she goes, here's some sweets for the sweet message.
Yeah.
And she was just really endear you to her 65-year-old sister. She was really endear you. So we wrapped up in Bangalore, and we visited the four different ecclesias and had a couple of the parlor meetings and had the public meetings. So from there, we flew to Madras. And you could take a plane flight from Bangalore to Madras, which was only $32. So you can fly within India quite reasonably, and it's because it was very fast. And it's a lot more comfortable than taking a bus or a taxi. So if the brother were to go again, either first class train or flying, where you could go, which is most places, would certainly be preferable.
And then Peter go,
you can fly. Yeah, if Margaret and Peter go over, fly to these areas. Oh, yeah. And so in Madras, we met the brother Furtado, who is not yet consecrated, but this is the brother who had, we mentioned before, we talked in detail about, he had the charts on the Jubilee, and he entertained us for that afternoon. And then the other class, well, the class we met there, brother Sularan and Brother Victor. Brother Sularan is the 33-year-old elder who Brother Joseph from Kumbhiyathur had assigned to be the elder here to lead the others through the studies. And Brother Victor, who was a little bit younger than him, he's the brother that showed us a handwritten manuscript of the second volume in their own language. And now they're going to copy it in a nicer, he's going to do a nicer job, send it to us, the photostat, so we can make copies, send it back, so everyone in their class can have a copy, and then they're going to send the original to be printed by the brethren in Trichy on their press, which might take months, so they'd like, we just offered to have them have copies in the meantime.
He translated it himself?
Translated himself, and he's having Brother Joseph proofread it to make sure that it's correct. So it's nice, they have that respect for the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And this was probably the humblest class. They went back, and we went way back into these areas of these homes that, you know, you'd call them suburbs, but they're so pitiful. And they just had a little dirty little home, and yet they had a partial set of reprints, and we gave them a couple of books that we, our own books we brought, and they were just enthralled with them. And they have a couple sets of volumes, and they had received the truth through an in-law. One of their relatives had been in the truth, but they weren't living in that area, so they were conducting their own meetings. And there, I'm looking here, they have about 20 in the class, and 8 are consecrated, and 5 read English. And they're studying in the volumes in their class. They're studying through the volumes. And Brent spoke through a translator on the Day of Judgment, and when he was speaking, it was in a room, and the room was full of people, a little room, and then behind him there was another little room that opened down in the street, and that had people sitting in it. Then there was people standing in the street watching in the doors, watching him give his talk. And then they had one of the plastic charts pegged up on the wall behind them, so it was real nice. And they bring out a little tray with just a handful of cookies on there, and a little cup, metal cup with orange drink in there, and they set it down, and none of them will touch the cookies. They, you know, want you to eat them all, I mean, it's really, really go out of their way to make you feel at home. And they have, every place is kind of dingy and dirty, but they had the reprint sitting on a shelf all by themselves, you know, nice and taken care of.
They gave you that little note.
And they gave us a little note. They gave us a little note saying that they wanted volume number such and such to such and so, because they were missing them in their set.
Uh-huh.
So they requested, this is what we'd like to have. In the humblest of places, seeing, you know, we're there and we got nice clothes and watches and we flew over there and we're traveling by taxi and all sorts of different things like this, and didn't ask for a single, you know, piece of money. Strictly, all they'd like to have is literature. And they were just thrilled to have us there. And if Brother would come, that would be, it just makes their whole day, so to speak, makes their whole year. So we were really impressed with that class, particularly with their efforts. So then we always spent that one evening there with them. They had to all work the next day, so that kind of used up that time. And so we took a first class sleeper train from Madras up to Bombay, which was a 24-hour ride, and that was a fairly nice way to travel. And then when we arrived in Bombay that night, Brother Brent spoke to nine people on the fundamental truth of the plan, and they served us a snack, and that kind of wrapped up that evening. And then the next day, Brother Bharti had to work, and so we couldn't meet with any of the friends. And so that night, that's when I changed my plans and flew out that night. And then Brent flew out the very next morning, because we had basically accomplished the work there, and we were basically just spending the whole day on our own in Bombay without really accomplishing anything spiritual. So that's basically the end of the trip. And I'd just kind of like to read something just kind of briefly here, that we've summarized that there are 12 classes that we visited, 12 ecclesias, and we've deduced basically that there are a little over 40 English reading consecrated brethren. And so in general, and we've taken the notes, and what we hope to do is send one complete set of the pastor's literature to each one of the ecclesias. Now, and there's 12. One of the ecclesias, Father Fernandez, they have quite a complete set. But what, for example, the book we wanted to send is the Gems of the Mind, Bible Student Manual, Expanded Old Testament Comments, the Covenant Book, the Question Book, Harvest Gleanings, Sermon Book, Overland Monthly, Diaglot, Strong's Concordance, Thayer's Lexicon, 1910 Convention Report, Index to the Volumes, Charts on the Tabernacle and the Plan, Sets of Volumes, Tabernacle Shadows, Dawn Hymnals, Smith's Bible Dictionary, Manas, Songs in the Night, they'd like to have Full of Drama of Creation, samples of all the literature, booklets and tracts for each of their English reading brethren, Son of the Highest, God's Promises Come True, and several classes would like to have the camp songs, and then the reprints to several of the classes, and then rounding out the sets of reprints that certain brethren have. And then what we would like to do is send duplicate or multiple sets of these books to each of the English reading brethren in the class, and that would be like a Gems Manual, Old Testament Comments, Question Book, Diaglot, Strong's, Index of the Volumes, Set of Volumes, Tabernacle Shadows, Smith's Bible Dictionary, Manna, and the sample literature. So that each English reading consecrated brother could have that in his own home. Because having just the one set, which what we've seen basically is the elders would keep the set in their home, and they would loan. They tell us they'd loan out a book if someone came and asked for it. Well, if you have six English reading brethren in the class and you got one question book, it almost inhibits their study. So they were excited with the thought that we would mail to each individual ecclesia the literature they could use for their English reading brethren.
How do you propose to go about it? You know, are you going to be sending an announcement in the newsletter or of needs?
Yeah.
Or
we were going to announce this plan to the brethren in the newsletter, let them know it was available, and then we were going to send a copy of the letter to different secretaries of the classes who might be interested, and then talk to brethren such as George Wilmot, Ken Ross, and George Payback, Carl, different ones who are involved in publishing of the different literature, and see what their thoughts are along these lines. And we have had pledges of contributions already, even before we left. Several brethren came forward and wanted to donate money for the poor, and we told them to wait till we got back and we could tell them how wise we could be using. And so now our words are that this money would be best used, and the only way we would be involved with it is to buy literature here and mail literature to the individual classes there with their own set of labels, so that they feel that they're being independently dealt with as a class, and it's not any pre-arranged committee before, so that there is not a stumbling along those lines, because that different ones won't cooperate with others, and they all need to have the pastor's writings, hopefully to grow, and so maybe some fences can be mended, so we don't have any prejudice one over another, and we don't want anyone to feel that we're favoring one over another. And they have that tendency that if one gets literature and they can present it to others, it's a sign of your preference to that one who's received the literature, and then that has caused hard feelings in the past with committees. So you can just solely circumvent it just by mailing it directly to each class.
Do you think when you send out that English literature, do you think that'll encourage them to learn English?
Well, we're only going to send multiples of the set of these certain books to the brothers who do read English and are consecrated already.
Yeah. But do you think that'll encourage them?
The others?
So they can get their set of books?
Hopefully. If that would, that would be great. If it would, that would be great.
Do you think it'll make those brothers who do not know English too bad that they can't read English get something that they don't?
Well, the ones who do read English now are looked to as really being the ones who can supply the answers, because they can read the volumes and whatnot. So actually, that's why we had different ones, like they'd come up to you on the side and say, could you send me a manual? And another one would come up on the side, could you send me a set of 6 volumes? It was kind of like, you know, they're trying to get their order in, you know, like trying to get their special order in. And when we'd say, well, we can send a set of question books and whatnot, these help to all their English reading consecrated. Well, they might only have 4 in the class. Or maybe they have 8 in the class. But they were just dumbfounded that you would do that. It's almost like they're incredulous that you would be willing to do that.
Well, you said that one brother, someone had given him a common Bible, and they didn't know that there was a manual. They thought it was just the old common Bible, they didn't even know manuals existed.
Yep. Oh, Brother Ray Krupa, when he was over there, gave his father's common Bible, one of the old ones, very complete, to Brother Joseph. And Brother Joseph was just thrilled to death with this. It was a very nice gift on Ray's part. And yet it has all the answers in the back. They think so. He said, send us more comment books, Bibles.
Yeah.
We said, well, there's a brother back home with one. I said, I don't even have one. So we said, well, they're not printed. They haven't been printed in years. So, but we do have manuals that we can send. And it's a very difficult time making them understand what the manual was when it was the Bible. Without the Bible text, it's your comment. Bible without the Bible text is just a comment. So they go, well, you know, we'll have to wait and see. So it was just kind of funny.
Maybe, I don't know if it would work, but it could be that you let them know about the publishing committee to donate that stuff. You approach them.
Well,
a lot of money they got.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I'd just like to kind of finish this off with a... this is just kind of interesting. This is this little welcome address from Kunar. And I'll just read a little bit of it here where it says, it reads, let's see here. The flair for services of your association, the irksome responsibilities cast on you, your unstinted endeavors, sacrifices, and the frightful expenditure you have to meet are well known to us, and we sincerely do not intend to add on to your burden.
It's frightful.
Frightful. Frightful expenditure.
Amen, Brad.
Although a small congregation, ours is blessed with brethren who come forward of their own volition to share expenses of the ecclesia and contribute their mite, M-I-T-E, to the cause of his kingdom. That their mite, their little all,
yeah,
instead of their mite. But they had the thought of the little bit.
Oh, your mite.
Hence, we are not for any financial aid. It's interesting. Hence, we are not asking for financial aid, and on the contrary, we very earnestly look forward to your continued shower of books, magazines, and reprints, and publications that would serve our needs and take us a long way in spreading the glad tidings of his kingdom. All our need is for spiritual food and support by your prayers for us. So that's really, that was the spirit that we found throughout India.
That really is commendable.
That was the spirit.
Makes you feel you want to just get a lot of stuff over there.
Yeah. Well, that should end that then.
It's almost
a lot of progress.
Oh.